Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome today. This is Jerry from Sports Addicts. And what we're going to do today is we're going to start the day off with Mark Feider from Oregon. And we're going to talk about his fantasy football team. He has two of them that we're going to discuss, about 15 minutes apiece. The first one we're going to discuss is going to be the Seattle Hellcats, which is the most decorated team in a league called Dynasty Extreme League. He's won three titles there, two back-to-back. He's right now the current champ of the back-to-backs right now. And, Mark, welcome aboard. How are you today?
Pretty good. And yourself, Jerk?
I'm doing pretty good. Hanging in there. Trying to figure out how I can win one title in that league. Before we get started,
Want me to take your team before you carry and play it for you? Would that help?
What was that again?
You want me to play your team for you? Would that help?
No. No, I'm good. I'm actually getting better.
You sure?
I can take over your team for you
and make all the moves, and you just sit back and collect the accolades later.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind the next time we talk. Okay, the first thing we're going to talk about, obviously, is going to be the Seattle Hellcats. And with the Seattle Hellcats, we're going to go by position. I only do offensive positions. If there's a defensive league, I'll do the offensive positions and the major defensive contributions, and that's about it. First of all, we're going to talk about on your team, you have Josh Freeman, Colin Kaepernick, Jake Locker, and Matt Stafford as your quarterback. So you are definitely in good shape at the quarterback position. And you have Josh Freeman. By this being the Dynasty League, you have Josh Freeman, who is basically going to be a free agent. So
yep.
How do you look at your quarterback position as far as a strategy is concerned? Because you have two up and comers, you have a Spitfire stud in Stafford, but Stafford gained a great deal of his fantasy appeal in the final 3 or 4 weeks of the season, which technically it was a little bit too late if you wanted to use him through the season because he didn't have that head of steam that he had towards the end. You have Josh Freeman, who basically could have carried your team through, but at the same time, he kind of fizzled out about the time Stafford started back up. And I wanted to know, what do you think about your quarterbacks overall?
Well, you're right. I got four young quarterbacks for the most part. And Freeman was the guy I relied on most of the year. Stafford and Kaepernick both came on toward the end of the year. Right now, I'm looking at I'm obviously going to probably tag Freeman and keep him or try to keep him this season. He's my only one as a free agent. Next year, I have Stafford, so that's a potential problem with my upcoming running back situation next year, so I have to look at that a little bit. But right now, as far as the starting quarterback goes, I'm really going to in the driver's seat as far as having a luxury option to be able to pick, the true matchup deal here. Whoever I think will be the best matchup, probably those top three guys, Kaepernick, Freeman, or Stafford, will be my quarterback of choice for the year. It's really going to be a matchup situation, I think, next year.
Interesting. And at running back, you have a nice stable of running backs. We're going to talk about the main ones here. You have Marshawn Lynch, Adrian Peterson, Jacquez Rogers. You have Beanie Wells and Mark Ingram and Kendall Hunter as well. What do you see from a strategy standpoint with the running back position?
Well, obviously the two big guns in that lineup are Peterson and Lynch. Just solely due to the fact that they are – the bell cow type guy there, and they're few and far between those type of running backs where they're going to get the majority of the carries on a team anymore. That running back by committee thing has not yet happened in Seattle or in Minnesota. So I'm going to ride them two ponies until they die.
Totally understand that.
I do have some fine young running backs coming up Ingram finally started to show some life last year toward the end of the season. And I really, really thought hard about playing him in that championship game. But I didn't in the end. But I thought hard about it. And that's the way I did it all most of the year. I was playing back and forth with, because I'm hurting at wide receiver. So I did the flex option quite a bit by putting in an extra running back, and it paid off for me all year long, basically. I got some really great running backs. Kendall Hunter, I think, is going to be the heir apparent to Frank Gore. And Gore gets hurt a lot, but he comes back pretty quick. But Hunter, I think, is the guy that's going to end up taking that spot when Gore finally gets knocked out totally. And Jacquizz Rodgers looks like he's going to be a solid player, too. How much longer Atlanta is going to keep Turner around remains to be seen. He seemed like he showed a little bit of wear there again toward the end of the year. I don't know. But at running back, I'm set for quite a while. I just have to do some contract management with this group for coming up next year, because I think I got three, I think, that are going to be free agents next year, if I remember right.
Right. And then at wide receiver, your top receivers are Mike.
Yeah,
wow.
Question.
That was your answer. Marcus Colston, who is going into free agency. And,
yeah, I'm trying to hold on to Colston this year, yeah.
And that's pretty much what I see. So
yeah,
that's definitely
an area
Do you have any strategy on how you can bolster your wide receiver core?
Well, I'm going to have to look at the guys that are coming in free agency. I really haven't looked at other teams to see who's going to be out there that I can possibly try and snag. Again, I've got the, I'm way at the bottom of the draft for picking, so obviously the young rookie quarterbacks or wide receivers that are coming into the league are going to be potentially gone by the time I get to draft again. So I'm going to have to look at free agency and possibly just going all in and buying a wide receiver and, and then giving up my first-round pick. So that's kind of what I'm thinking right now.
Okay. And then in the tight end.
I did.
Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
No, yeah, just try to get an established wide receiver so that I can team him up with Colston and start looking at going from there.
Gotcha. And then at tight end, this is interesting. You have JerMichael Finley, Brandon Pettigrew, and you have Anthony Fasano, all three of them pretty much from a scoring standpoint within the same ballpark of one another. Looks like Anthony Fasano and JerMichael Finley are going to be free agents as well. What is your strategy there?
Well, I think I'm going to tag Finley at this point. I'm still kind of undecided that, but Finley's probably going to be a guy I'm going to try and tag. And then I think that... I got two rookie wide receivers as well from last year that I expect to start paying dividends later on. I think that's how you pronounce the kid's name, is in San Diego.
Correct.
And with, Gates down there, the man can't stay healthy anymore. So sooner or later, this kid is going to start playing.
I think so as well.
So as far as tight end, I think I'm in good shape. The areas that I'm going to concentrate, obviously, are the biggest area of need for my squad is a wide receiver. So that's what I'm going to have to look at. But as far as, Fasano or Finley, obviously of the two of them, I would prefer to keep Finley, I think, at this point. More
okay.
Upside there.
Based on the fact that you have won three titles in DXL and you have won the last two back-to-back, what do you see as far as your outcome in 2013?
It's a long season. You know, I've been relatively injury-free the last 2 years, which is a major consideration. Although, not this year, but the previous year, I lost Peterson right there at the very end, and that hurt me a little bit. But, again, I got great depth at running back, so I was able to cover that up. I got to do a little bit better with the tagging players. I didn't do that last year, and I lost a couple wide receivers in free agency. So just going to have to play it by ear and see how it goes. But as far as next year goes, who knows? I mean, it's totally up in the air. You know that as well as I do, JC, because it's a you know, there's so many variables that could happen. I mean, guys could get traded, players could get hurt, all these different coaching changes that happened this year could affect how things happen on different squads. You know, there's lots and lots of variables. So I expect to do fairly well. I didn't win my division this year, which is something that I take, you know, quite a bit of pride in, trying to win that division. So that's my immediate goal, is to get back to the playoffs and win my division.
Now, yep. I actually have a question, if I may. Cleveland Ray here. Now, obviously you've been talking about how your wide receiver depth is by far your weakest point. Now, in the draft, are you going to go out? I've been reading some of this sports about a gentleman by the name of Cordrella Patterson, a wide receiver out of Tennessee, and this guy is incredibly raw, but he's definitely one of the more physically gifted athletes, and he's projected to fall to the Miami Dolphins in the 2013 draft at the 12th overall pick. Were you in this upcoming draft for your, the league? Are you willing to take a chance on Cordell Patterson, or are you going to go with a more, you know, obviously more solidifiable wide receiver who will be drafted lower, but will have a player like Ryan Fitzpatrick, Peyton Manning, or Matt Flynn to pass to him?
That's a good question. I really don't know. I haven't really looked at the guys coming out of, you know, coming into the draft this year. And like I say, I'm drafting way down at the bottom of the list. There's a possibility that kid that you were just talking about may not be there. So it may be a moot point. As a general rule, I'm not adverse to taking players with histories. I had Kenny Britt on my team, and he was taken from me last year as an example. Really, really gifted wide receiver, but can't stay out of trouble. So I'm not adverse to taking guys like that. You can get burned, or you can have a real diamond in the rough. So you never know.
Okay. Now we're going to go ahead and segue over to the San Jose Snipers. The San Jose Snipers, of course, is in red zone blitz. You took over a team that was ailing, and this is where we're going to flip the roles, where I did assist this team on trying to shore up a huge need at quarterback. And before I turn the team over to you, so you, for your future, you're looking fairly decent here. You actually have Colin Kaepernick, Andrew Luck, Ryan Tannehill as a threesome for your quarterback spot, and they're all young. You also have Tarvaris Jackson and Jimmy Clausen. Tarvaris Jackson is coming off. He'll be gone because of the fact that his contract year expired. But what do you see as far as your quarterback needs here in red zone blitz?
I'm not really looking at addressing the quarterback spot this year here in the red zone blitz. It looks to me like an up and coming strength. I've got three starters at and that's always a great thing when you've got a 16 team league to have three starters. That's almost a luxury. Right now, Luck and Kaepernick look to be the two guys that I would be leaning on the most. But Tannehill, I think, will be okay in the long run. They need to get him a lot of players down there to get around him down there in Miami. So we'll see how it goes. that looks to me like it's an area that's potentially going to be a strength on this squad.
Okay, and then also at the running back position, again, you're kind of sitting in the same scenario, but you actually have a little bit more help there. You have Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who is, by the way, going to be a free agent. You have Beanie Wells, injury prone. But then there's two intriguing ones there in Isaiah Feed and Robert Turbin. How do you foresee your running back position?
Well, overall, at this point, this is the weakest point in my squad, in this particular squad. I have got to get some running back help. I lean exclusively almost on Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and most of the season I only played him and flexed this position horribly bad. With another strength of my team, in this particular case, tight end. I use tight ends a lot in this particular situation. Both Feed and Turbin are up-and-coming guys, although Richardson outplayed Pede down in St. Louis. So that may be a minus. Who knows? We'll have to see how that works out next year. But Steven Jackson's getting toward the end of his career, so it's going to be Richardson or Pede probably being the guy there. Turbin is sitting behind Marshawn Lynch. Kind of a similar player as Lynch. So in the way Seattle played him, it looks to me like they've got pretty good faith in this kid to take over if Lynch goes down. So, again, that's a potential strength there. So that's kind of the situation. Beanie Wells, he's just Beanie Wells. When he's on the field, he's pretty explosive and pretty interesting to watch. But, man, keeping the guy healthy is near impossible. So that's a negative. So with the second pick I have in the draft in this team, I am looking at running backs, and hopefully I can get me a solid one.
Okay, and then we're looking at your wide receiver core. You actually have Santonio Holmes, Vincent Jackson, Julio Jones, Titus Young, who I view as a head case at this point. You have Ernie Doucette, Malcolm Floyd, and Eric Decker. Seems like you have somewhat of a luxury there, too. How do you see it?
Yeah, this is a pretty good group for the most part. I'm actually kind of considering putting a couple of these guys up for trades to move up in the draft a little bit and try and get back into the draft to get another running back maybe, or another position. I'm not sure exactly yet, but running back is obviously the biggest need I have. So, yeah, the guys I use most often here were Vincent Jackson and Eric Decker. Both guys had a good seasons. So, yeah, I think you're right. I've got a pretty good bunch of luxury here. I tried to do the matchup thing here pretty well, and for the most part I did pretty well with it, I think.
I think for the most part, you were a victim of people just outscoring you more so than the fact that you couldn't score, because you were putting up good numbers for scoring. The problem was that the person that you met up against was putting up equally the same, you know, better scores.
Yeah, I think somebody got blowed out once all season really bad. And that was early on in the season when I was still trying to play with this roster a little bit. But, yeah, I went on that 10-game losing streak there, which is the longest losing streak I've ever had in playing fantasy football. But, and I was getting beat by tenths of a point for the most part, or 2 points or something to that effect. It was just one of the deals where other people were just outscoring me that week, you know.
Correct. Now, looking at your tight end position, by the way, Eric Decker is a free agent this season in that particular league. At your tight end position, you have three decent tight ends by name. You have Greg Olsen at Carolina, Aaron Hernandez, and Dustin Keller. And Greg Olsen, he was by far and away your top tight end this past season, even though Aaron Hernandez started making a come on towards the end of the season because of Gronkowski's injury. But Greg Olsen is also a free agent this upcoming season for you. How do you view your tight end position?
Yeah, this is a team. This is a spot where you're right. I got good name recognition, but as far as production goes, Greg Olsen was far and away my best tight end of the group, and I'm going to do the best I can to try and retain this kid. He's one of the guys that I'm really, really interested in holding on to.
Right.
And then I'm going to kind of look in the draft this year to possibly snag an up-and-coming tight end, a young kid that I think will do well. And possibly this is an area of trade bait type thing here. I might be looking at moving Hernandez a little bit just because I think it might be a good choice at this point. I might be able to get somebody to bite on him. So that's kind of what I'm thinking right now. Right now it was kind of a strength. I use this spot a lot for as my flex position. I got good, solid, consistent play out of these three guys for the most part. Keller was hurt quite a bit, but Hernandez came in through, fortunately, when I needed him.
Right.
They were definitely more consistent than the wide receivers. The wide receivers I have are kind of volatile. It seems like one week they would be really, really on, and the next week they were cold. So it was consistency problems at wide receiver from the guys I was starting. It was one of them type of deals where if I picked Eric Decker, he would have kind of a down game. If I
right.
picked Vincent Jackson, he would have a down game. Kind of one of those type of deals, you know. So it was kind of hit and miss with the wide receiver spot where these guys were more consistent. And that, to me, is the is what I like from a fantasy player is consistency. It makes it easy to set your lineup and go that way from week to week with minimal changes, and that's what I prefer.
Okay. Now, Cleveland Ray, how are you doing? And welcome to the show as Jerry's sidekick here. How's your day going?
Whew. Well, I decided that I'm going on a cruise in July, and I went to the post office to get a, and I'll make this really quick, to get a passport, of course. And I waited in line for 2 hours. And then right when I get to the front of the line, it says on the little sheet that you get that you have to have a validation that you're a citizen of the United States. And I brought my former passport. And sure enough, I go there and she goes, yeah, passport doesn't count. So I basically wasted 2 hours of my day in line at this post office. And I'm like, I'm like, you're telling me. So even though I looked up on the website that a passport works, it doesn't work. She goes, yep. And I'm like, well, that makes no sense whatsoever, lady. But, you know, it's the government. You can't argue with them. So I rushed home so that way I could get back on this fine program.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, you know what? A bad day with sports is better than a good day at the post office.
Oh, man, you are right about that one. The only thing that was good is there was a couple with their four-month-old child, and we were talking, and it was kind of funny. The child made some funny faces, and you know how it is with little kids. Well,
yep.
Let's enough about the personal life of Cleveland Ray. It's not very exciting. You're not missing much, people. There's a lot going on in basketball,
yep.
Baseball, football. Everything in the world is clicking now. You have the Super Bowl. You have, unfortunately, two deaths of two Hall of Famers on the same day that happened a week ago. You have the All-Stars announced for the Western and Eastern Conference, the reserves. No. Where should we take this show, Jerry? Where should we start out on this day?
Okay, before we actually start up today, I want to actually do a final question to Mark. And also, Mark is going to stay on for about an hour or so with us as well so that we can go back and forth. The one thing that I want to bring up is, Mark, from your perspective, based on who has made it to the Super Bowl, to play so far. What is your gut feeling on how this Super Bowl is going to end?
I think the NFC will win it. I think San Francisco takes it all. The 49ers are they're rolling right now. Of course, so you could say that about the Ravens as well, but I like the 49ers in this game. Maybe it's because the team that I follow all the time, the Seahawks, got beat, but that's the way it is. I'm an NFC guy in this one.
Okay. Cleveland Ray, how do you see it?
I got to go with the Ravens, man. Just like what our partner, or the gentleman who we had on last week, Brian Toohey, was saying how he thinks sometimes professional sports can be rigged. I think they're purposefully going to rig the game. Not Ryan Fitzpatrick. Oh, what's his face? The second year guy from Nevada. Yeah, he's going to throw four picks. Frank Gore will rush for 5 yards. And the Ravens will kill him. That's what I think. Just because of the fact that, I mean, you've got to have one of the greatest defensive players riding into the sunset. I mean, it's just picture perfect, and it'd be great for the NFL, and it'd be great for publicity.
I can't argue that. You know, Ray Lewis is going to be stepping down and retiring after this game, and, you know, that team is on an emotional high. There's no doubt about it. Because of that, I think they're susceptible to a letdown. I mean, they've had, you know, three pretty solid, tough ball games to play there. So I don't know. They can, you know, they're on a roll and they can pull it off, no doubt about it. But then again, they had a heck of a slump there in the middle of the season too, and they fired their offensive coordinator and all of that stuff that went on. Both, you know, that was pretty a gutsy call on Harbaugh's case there, you know. So I don't know. The Ravens are an interesting team. I just don't know that defense, as old as it is, can keep up with that young quarterback in San Francisco.
We're going to actually find out. What I did, I kind of played both sides. I actually took the 49ers and I gave 3.5 points on my ticket. And then I teased it and went the opposite way. I took Baltimore because it gave me 10 points. I took Baltimore, or 9.5 points, so I took Baltimore. And I also took the over, which was the line was 40. So I took the over in Baltimore, and I'm hoping that it kind of middles out so I can win on both sides.
That sounds about right, Jerry. Can't make a decision. You guys got to keep playing around with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Tinker, tinker, tinker. Okay, what we're going to talk about at this point is Javon Belcher. Time to find out that he shot his fiancée that he was going to marry 5 days later. He shot her 9 times. Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Javon Belcher had a blood alcohol level more than twice the legal limit when he shot his girlfriend 9 times and then killed himself in front of his coach and general manager. An autopsy released this on Monday. The Jackson County Medical Examiner report on Belcher, who was 25, by the way, raised new questions about whether police should have done more before the December 1 murder-suicide. Officers found Belcher sleeping in his idling car about 5 hours earlier, but let him go inside a nearby apartment to sleep it off. At the time of the autopsy, his blood alcohol count was 0.17, which is more than twice the limit of 0.08% from Missouri drivers, and it was likely higher when he shot his girlfriend, who by the way is 22, at the couple's Kansas City home. This is very worrisome for me because. I mean, what would drive a person? First of all, I understand. You know, if you're indulged in alcohol, and I'm not saying that he was an alcoholic because I honestly don't know if this was a daily occurrence. But on the other side of it is he really had to have some deep things going through his mind to be in a situation where you shoot the woman that you're going to marry 5 days later 9 times, and then run over to her and say, please don't die, while kissing her. I mean, what do you think about this one, Cleveland Ray?
Wow. It's very sad to think that somebody who he claimed that he wanted to spend the rest of his life for in sickness and in health, that he felt the need to shoot her. And obviously, I haven't heard any, there's no, at least in my knowledge, there's been no reason why she was shot. But it's sickening. We have these players who are at the height of any type of physical expectation you can expect out of someone. And they're, and many, many people, millions of men across the United States would be willing to trade their life right now to become an NFL player and make $1 million or even $500,000 just to play the sport that they love. I'm speechless. I had no clue to realize that she got shot 9 times. But in a society, I think it's interesting because we need to step back and take one thing out of this that I've said before, and I will preach and I will continue to preach. We can't continue to hold players at high standards. We just can't. Let this serve as an example why. Do you really, if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, and your son looks up to a player like Matt Cassel, all of a sudden he finds out about the Javon Belcher incident, what do you say to your son? Do you say that he's not worthy? Do you say that the player's not worthy? Do you say that the player is any less of a man? What does that do for the son? Does he lose hope in his idols, the Kansas City Chiefs? It's a very sticky situation. It's very disheartening. But unfortunately, I'm not really sure what much else we can do at this point in time. We can learn from what happened. We can hopefully make sure that something like this never happens again. And unfortunately, it sounds like right now they're blaming alcohol. Which always seems to be the cop out for anyone is that,
well,
it's always
the other could, and the other cop out would be we have to blame it on the gun, because after all, nobody else, you know, the gun could have done it by itself. So, you know, we got to look at the individual.
If guns make people if guns kill people, spoons make you fat, cars cause drunk driving, and cancer is caused by eating too much ketchup. You know, it's just you can't continue to make the same – you can't continue to just blame it. And you just can't continue to – it's a gun. No, it's the person who's holding the gun. If you put a gun down in the middle of a floor, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to sprout legs and arms and say, hello, my name's Timmy. Nice to meet all you guys. It's not going to do that. I've tried.
It didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't. It just sat there, even tried to offer it like some nachos. It just kind of sat there.
Mark, what do you see? What do you see regarding this particular subject?
I have to agree with Cleveland Ray there. You know, it's tragic that it happened. You know, he obviously emptied his gun, and he had to pull that trigger 9 times. You know, why he did it, no one's going to know, because he shot himself. So, did he have a screw loose or something? Who knows? I don't know. No one will ever know. The point is that there's, you know, it's like I say, I have to agree with Ray. It's tragic, but there's absolutely nothing that you can really do to prevent it other than teach people that guns kill. I mean, yeah, we reported that, you know, somebody shot so-and-so or kids took guns to school or whatever the case happens to be, you know, but like Ray was saying, it's the gun, you know, everybody blames the gun. It's not the gun. It's the guy holding the gun is the problem. And
I agree.
I don't know if it's video games that are desensitizing people to the fact that, you know, you keep pulling the trigger and you keep killing whatever it is you're shooting at there, and it's a game. I don't know. Is that people think, do they get that mindset? You know, I don't know. My kids were raised around the fact that I hunt, you know. So they saw the outcome. I took them hunting with me. They actually got to see me shoot pheasants and like that. So they know when a gun goes off that potentially something's going to die. So I don't know if that's what people need, to have a bucket of water thrown on them and say, hey, look, this is the, you know, reality here. A gun is a tool of sorts, but man, you know, and as far as race thing, that we shouldn't put people on pedestals or anything of that nature, I kind of disagree with that. I understand his angle there, but at the same time, I think that guys like, you know, the Peyton Mannings of the world, or, you know, those guys show some, you know, or going back to Michael Jordan and stuff like that, you know, there are some really good guys out there. I think you need to be more selective with the players that you're idolizing, as it were.
But it's
that
not,
makes sense.
It does, but is it not fair? I understand thinking, there's a difference, okay, Mark, between thinking highly of someone and then putting in the same realm of godliness. Is that what I'm saying? I'm saying that now we're having these players who are being worshipped that have 20 million followers on Twitter. And
yeah,
that every move they do is watched with a million microscopes. And the fact of the matter is, if they burp in public or if they fart, we shouldn't be making a big deal about it. You know, they're the same thing. I understand that's a terrible
example
compared to the murder-suicide that happened. But,
you know,
we got to realize that everybody has demons. Everybody has something in their past. You know, it's an international theme. Everybody's been heartbroken. Everybody has been made fun of. You know, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything an athlete has gone through is the same thing that me and you and Jerry sitting here have been through in our lives. It is, like I said, it's extremely unfortunate it happened, but like I said, these parents and these children need to realize that we should stop the worshiping of these athletes and change it into a respect. Because respect means you give them their dues, but you respect their privacy. Godliness means that you don't respect their privacy. You need to know everything about them, and you follow their every single solitary move. That's what I'm saying.
The other side of that is there's a lot of these doggone sports stars who actually want you to know what they're doing. Every, you know, I just sat on the toilet. I just went over to the kitchen to get a glass of water.
That's Twitter.
I just, like, you know, your Ocho Cincos and TOs, and I mean, there's a host of those nut cases as well.
yeah, there's no doubt about that. But they're not alone. I mean, you look at other celebrities, you know, singers and actors and politicians and all the rest of that stuff. They're in it too. You know, I mean,
that's true.
You know, at some point, you know, people have to discern. They actually have to stop and think about who they want to emulate, I guess is the word I'm looking for here. Is it, you know, the Michael Jordan of the world, or is it Javon Belcher? You know, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough thing. I mean, you look back at Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth was a noted womanizer and drunk and other things, but you don't hear that side about Babe Ruth. Today, Babe Ruth would be crucified by the press.
Yes, he would be lit up like a torch. That's exactly right. And another
imagine
one would
if
be
JFK, tried. You know, JFK and the Marilyn Monroe. If JFK was president right now, that would be blown way out of proportion.
No, it wouldn't be blown way out of proportion. Well, it would be, because it's sensational. You know, the press loves that kind of thing. You know, anything to sell newspapers now. Back then, the press showed a little discretion, I guess is the word. So,
right.
Or respect. I think respect,
yeah,
is
respect.
For.
Now everything is, you know, so public, we have to make, you know, it's worse now than at any time in history. And I don't know if it's because of television and radio or whatnot. I can't say. I mean, but everything is magnified by 1,000% now.
I think I know the reason why. Now, you said, Mark, that you have children. How old are your kids?
Well, now they're 20 and 21.
Okay, so they're obviously grown up now. Now, when they were younger, like when they were 10, 11, 12, whatever, did they play sports growing up, like soccer
yeah.
or basketball or football or, you know, did they play into that stuff when they were younger?
Yeah. The two girls, all three of them played basketball at one point or another, and Kevin played a year of football.
So think about it. When they were little, obviously I went through this in my lifetime, where you're given awards for doing nothing. There is a kid on the bench who will pick his nose, weighs 400 pounds, can't even support himself, and, like, he'll win best bench warmer of the year. This is what our society has come to. It's the fact that we believe we shouldn't harm these children's respect, like their self-respect for themselves. When all honesty, it's just making things worse.
Gotta have high self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly. These children now don't have high self-esteem because they're not being told by their parents they're doing well. They're being, and they deserve it. Like, kid gets an A on a test. Hey, outstanding job. Kid gets an F on a test. That's a bad job. You lose your Game Boy or television for a day. Now we're having, oh, Joe, you got an F. Oh, that's okay. Here's an ice cream bar. Or we're having where these kids expect they're going to get something every time. Mommy, Daddy, I went to the bathroom. Oh, congratulations. Can we go to McDonald's now? No. So these kids, and now we're starting to see this generation come through the actual professional sports level, is that they expect to have the spotlight on them. And whether that's fair or not, you're getting paid $15 million to play a kid's sport. You figure that out. Well, meanwhile, we're having teachers who slave away summers working two or three jobs who will barely scrape the surface with that house that they're paying for with their three kids. So that's what I'm saying. I think it's because of just the fact that we are giving all these kids everything they want. We're not showing them to use their imaginations. We're being all enveloped in everything they do, not even just the major stuff, even the little tiny stuff like when they cut their toenails. And it's showing. It's showing now that most of these kids have turned into attention, people who need attention to live. And that's what I think.
And you're on the right track. You are definitely on the right track. The other side of it is people tend to grow up and want attention because when they were growing up, their teenage mother wasn't trying to get attention of her own, and she didn't have time or he didn't have time to give attention to the kid. So that's where that lies. What we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead and segue over to the Big Ten decides to change the – they're thinking about changing the names of their division.
By the way, real quick, I hate to step on that for a second, but I got one thing I want to add on real quick. By the way, how sad is that? That some of these moms now are so desperate for attention that they won't even pay attention to their blood and flesh for more than 5 minutes. They gotta look at their Facebook. They gotta look at their Twitter rather than having lunch with them or asking them about how their day went. You know, I just think that's sick.
Well, you can say it that way, but then if the mother is 13, 14, or 15, you've got to understand that they're still a child also.
All right. Well, what's this Big Ten news? Are they going to name themselves the Even Bigger Ten?
They're actually talking about renaming their division. They're currently called the Legends and the Leaders Division, and they're talking about changing them, but they haven't come up with a reason reason to change them. And this comes on the heels of the Mountain West setting up their layout, which basically has a mountain in one division, and one division is called Mountain and the other one is called West, and all the teams in the Mountain division are in a Mountain time zone. All the teams in the West division are either in the Pacific or in Hawaii. So now they want to do something similar to that, and some of the things they came up with was black and blue. One was called Plains or Lakes. They don't know what they want to call them, but they realize that Leaders and Legends is not catching people by storm, and they want to change it. I guess what happened was the media on the Mountain West Conference actually kind of led them to this point. To me, it's a division. It's a Big Ten Conference. Play off the Big Ten Conference, and call them Division A, Division Z or B, or whichever one you want it to be, or Division 1 and 1A, or 1A, 1B, or whatever. It's the Big Ten Conference. Play off of that. Maybe one the big division and one the 10 division. I don't know. What do you think?
I think they're just barking up the wrong tree. I agree with you there. Does it really matter what you're going to call your divisions? They play each other. Who really kibs a turkey one way or the other? You know, their problem is survival. With these super conferences now that have got 14 and 12 and 14 teams and like that, they need to step up and get a couple more teams. They need to become the Big 12 or something.
Well, they actually have 14 teams in the Big Ten.
Right. So why are they still calling themselves the Big Ten?
Great question.
That's Big 14 or something.
How about taking numbers out of the doggone division and coming up with a real out of the conference and coming up with a big conference? Because at one time, the Big Ten had 12 teams and the Big 12 had 10 teams. So, I mean, what you do, swap? You know, why do we need numbers in it? And honestly, the Big 12 should go back to the Southwest Conference because that's basically where they're located for the most part, minus West Virginia. The Big 10 is the Midwest, so why not become the Midwest Conference?
Well, first off, not only do I give a turkey, but I give a chicken. Here's the reason why. You have to think of all these creative names. The fact that they're saying it's such a big deal to consider division names. I'm sorry. The Legends and Leaders is corny, and it's not something that's going to grab people's attention. You know, ooh, the Legends and Leaders. It's, you know, those things are shoved down our throat by people who claim that sports figures are bigger than what they are. Uh-huh. Now, here's what I have to say. Why don't you name, so you have 12 teams. Let's say you make three sub-conferences of four teams in the Big Ten. And why don't you have them named after a famous former alum from the Big Ten, like the Steve Alford division or the Isaiah Thomas division. I'm just using IU names, but the possibilities are endless. Why don't we do something like that and be a little bit more creative? Legends and Leaders. I've heard 8-year-olds think of better names than that. Be more creative than that.
I agree. And why use names at all? Why not come up with something a lot more catchy, like, maybe how about North or South, East or West? Split it one way or the other and go that route. I mean, that to me is more effective than doing what you're doing now. And basically what they did was they put all the teams that begin with a certain letter in one division plus one team and everybody else was in the other one. Why, you know, just go down the doggone planetary train and if you want to go north and south, then these are the teams north of a certain line, these are the teams south of a certain line, next. Or if you split it down the other way, then these are the teams east in that division, you know, in the conference. These are the teams west in that conference. Next. It's not a big deal. These guys have lost their mind. When we get to the point where we're trying to say that our division names are not catchy and people are not catching on, you've got problems. You've got bigger problems than trying to figure out the name of the doggone division.
Amen
to
that.
The other thing. Here, that being said, that's a great point. If you have talent on the floor and you're being competitive and you have a good product, people aren't going to care what your name is. Look at the Orlando Magic. Ooh, the Magic. So exciting. But look, they've had great talent over the years. Tim Hardaway, Shaquille O'Neal, Steve Francis, Tracy McGrady, and Dwight Howard. They've had a lot of talent that's been able to play there. And no one seems to mention the fact that they have a terrible name in the Magic. You know, I think that's one of the worst names in sports. More, I understand that Disneyland's there, but that's like naming a team in Utah the Jazz.
Well, that team was not named the Jazz in Utah.
They were named the Jazz in New Orleans. I know. I'm just using an example. But the
And out of all honesty, I think the New Orleans, which we're going to be talking about later on, I think the New Orleans should have went to Utah and said, hey, can we work out a deal and get the Jazz back in New Orleans? That's what
but
they
interesting
have
enough that if aren't they doing that for Brandy though to sell? This is enough. That's a great point. I didn't even think about that one. Aren't they just doing it so they can maybe sell some old jerseys? I mean, what's the big deal? Hornets was actually not a bad name. The Pelicans, although I don't like the name, their new logo is pretty neat. You know, the Bobcats. Now one of the more exciting names. It's okay, but I mean, why is it a big deal that you have to go out and go all retro? You know, we have to learn. We have to keep moving forward. The NBA is a progressive league, not where we go back and keep making it. Oh, the Hornets. You know.
The
Chicago Bulls don't go back and say, hey, we want to be the Chicago Stags again. You know, why don't we just resurrect George Mikan and Oscar Robertson from the dead? You know, we don't hear that. So why do we keep continue saying that we want? You know, if you want a throwback retro jersey, that's fine. But the fact that you want the old team name back, I just think that's kind of weird. Just move forward. There's a reason why it was abandoned in the first place.
Well, keep in mind also that they only you'll always see this once every 15 to 25 years. And the reason why is because the generation coming in never saw it. That's the reason why.
Good point, but I just don't know.
And in the information world that we're in, people view people as sheep or cattle. People don't know where they want to go, and the internet or information highway is going to let you know where you want to go. It's that simple. And on that note, what we're going to do is we're going to go to a station break, and we'll be back with the Sports Addicts, and we'll go ahead and move forward with our further discussion.
Antiwartees.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwartees.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-War Tees.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
There's a saying that the only thing certain in life is death and taxes. Well, they should include hard drive failure as well. You can ensure your data is safe by using Maximum Archive's online backup solution. By securely backing up the Maximum Archive servers, your data is protected from fire, theft, or simple hard disk failure. Don't let your data go unprotected. Sign up for Maximum Archive today. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout time and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hey, welcome back to Sports Addict. What we're going to discuss this time around, we're going to talk about LeBron James. If you haven't heard yet, LeBron James was he just crossed 20,000 points in NBA history, and he has turned out to be the youngest to go to 20,000 points in NBA history. So what we're looking at now is the fact that he did it at 29 years, 122 days, Kobe Bryant was the previous youngest, and he did it at 29 years, 122 days. LeBron James did it at 28 years, 17 days. So in the first quarter, James also found Dwayne Wade slicing down the lane for his 5,000 career assists. He is the 13th player with 20,000 points and 5,000 assists. So he's actually done a couple of things quietly in the, you know, since he's been in the NBA. Mark, I know you're not a big NBA fan for the most part.
That's true.
Especially since the Seahawks, the Supersonics left and went on to become a juggernaut down in Oklahoma City. But you are getting a team pretty soon, hopefully, in the Sacramento Kings, who's supposed to be moving up there.
That's a fact. They're moving up, going to play in the old Key Arena, from what I understand, for a couple of years.
Hey, Mark, I got a question for you.
What's that?
I've always kind of wondered, what's it like to be a Seattle Supersonics fan, or I guess, live in Seattle, and deal with teams where you had players like Nick Collison and Vladimir Radmanovich starting?
Like Jerry said, I'm not a big basketball fan, so I don't pay that much attention to the Sonics or when they were here. And the 1 or 2 years that I actually did pay somewhat attention to them was when Jack Sigma and
John Sigma,
them guys, you know, were playing. So that's kind of gives you the vintage of the guys I know.
Right, Sean Kemp.
Sean Kemp or Gary Payton?
Yeah.
Deadlift Shrimp.
You know, what they were there for, I don't remember how many years they were in Seattle. They won, one championship in that entire period?
Correct.
Hey.
In fact,
hey,
I think
The Sacramento Kings haven't won a championship since the 50s when they were the Rochester Royals, so don't complain.
Actually, I think they're the only professional sports team outside the Storm. I believe that a WNBA Storm has won a couple championships up there. I'm not going to swear to that. But no other professional teams have won championships in Seattle.
You had that great Mariners team in, what was it, 2001 or 2002, where they won 110 games?
I think they lost, like, next to nothing. They won, like, every series that they had there all year long. I know that the team that you're talking about. Yeah, my dad
was
a big... That's
rookie year.
Yeah. So, but, you know, they haven't done much since then.
Oh, you got Felix Hernandez and Jesus, I can't hit Montero. You have you almost had a Justin Upton if you guys just had maybe one more offensive hitter.
Yeah, again, you know, that's water under the bridge. What ifs, you know, that's it's just one of them deals.
There's a lot of what ifs, man.
I think that going back to what I was saying earlier, I believe that's it. I think
Greg Oden was on the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Greg Oden was on the Portland Trail Blazers.
No, I know, but when that draft happened, remember, it was such a big deal. Who are you going to pick, Oden, or are you going to pick Durant? And imagine if Durant was picked first overall. And around him would be Damian Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge. That would be, and obviously Wesley Matthews. All those players are under the age of 26. That is a dangerous team. That would be a dangerous team if that actually happened.
I agree. So what do we think about LeBron James and his 20,000 points? Because we totally segued away from that. Okay. I don't particularly care for LeBron.
I'm from Cleveland, man. You got to remember. That's like a cuss word out of LeBron James.
Yeah. Well, regardless of what he did to leave Cleveland, I don't have an issue with him leaving Cleveland. I have an issue with how he left Cleveland. He I mean, that was the lowest of lows, the way he left. I mean, Art Modell for taking the Browns to Baltimore and making them the Ravens, even the way he left is not as bad as the way LeBron James left. At least Modell did not go public and say anything. He just left. But he made it clear before he left, hey, if you guys don't do this here, this is what I got to do. Now, on the other hand, with LeBron James, he went to New York and immersed himself on this doggone media saga that was just totally uncalled for. And he did it at the expense of getting into confrontations with the owner, and that's totally uncalled for. But we cannot deny the fact that he's a gifted player in the NBA. If he's not the only one, he's one of the top three players in the NBA that actually are what we would call superstars. And he's technically, at this point, he's the best basketball player on the planet. And as far as from a talent standpoint, that cannot be denied. From a situation where, he's done 5,000 assists and he's done 20,000 points, and he's the youngest to do the 20,000 points. I have to give the guy credit for that particular scenario. But on the other hand, I've always said this, and everybody knows it, I've always said that baseball and basketball in a pro market in the United States are basically padding stats. That's all they're doing. There's only, in both particular leagues, there's maybe at the very most 10 total teams that matter, and the other 20 are there for you to pass stats and run the scores up and run all your stats up so that you can say that you're a great person. So I think both sports are overrated in the way they handle their business. However, the guy has 20,000 points. I can't take that away from him. That's all I got to say about that.
I respect him as a basketball player. I do not respect him as a man of character and integrity. And what made me even more sick was Sports Illustrated's Sportsman of the Year was...
LeBron.
You guys don't know?
Lance Armstrong. No, I don't, actually.
Yeah, that's a very good guess. You're close. It was LeBron James. And you're telling me this year, I know these are two baseball names, but you had Robert Allen Dickey, R.A. Dickey, who came out of nowhere at the age of 38. All he did was win 20 games in the first knuckleballer to win the Cy Young Award. Miguel Cabrera, who overcame alcohol abuse to have an incredible year and win the first Triple Crown since Carlo Yastrzemski in 67. Somehow, they, even though they overcame tough consequences and did it and were good men and gave back to their community, somehow LeBron James, who is the quote-unquote unheralded hero in the NBA, deserved one just because he won an NBA title. I'm sorry, but if there's two men in the room and their names are Robert R.A. Dickey or LeBron James, I have to point the man who has more integrity and character. It's got to be R.A. Dickey. Because even when he knew he couldn't win, he didn't cry. He changed up his methods and developed a knuckleball that he could throw at 80 miles an hour and stun the league. And everybody points at LeBron. You know, he has expectations, and I'm sorry that you have expectations you have to fill because you're making $20 million. Nanit, I'm so sorry for you. But the way you handle your business, the way you treat people, the way you have become, you have no longer become the savior in Cleveland. You become the devil in Miami. And when you came out with that Nike commercial that said, "What should I do?" You know what you should have done. You shouldn't have made a big public deal about it, and you shouldn't have cried. You look at a player like Bill Russell. Bill Russell had Bob Cousy on his team. That was about it. You had a player like Michael Jordan score 60 points by himself and beat one of the greatest scorers in Larry Bird. Did he complain about talent around him? No. What about George Mikan? George Mikan carried teams on his back. Tim Duncan for a while down in San Antonio before Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili developed. Steve Nash in Phoenix, who he played all those years for, and yes, he had some nice pieces in Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion, and he had O'Neill for 2 years, but he didn't even get, I mean, he got close a couple years ago when he was in the Western Conference Finals. I mean, but look at, and those players are on their back, and they didn't cry about talent because they knew they were all-stars. They knew if you carry that name superstar, you can carry a team on your back, and you can change the game. And they didn't have to have big talent around them like LeBron, quote-unquote, needed to do. Because guess what? You were in the NBA Finals, and you tanked. You lost 4-0 obviously a dynasty team in the San Antonio Spurs. I am sorry that you have to be little Miss Drama. You have to have star talent around you to win, because that's complete and utter BS. You won 60 games in a season multiple times while you were with the Cavs, with players like Daniel Gibson coming off the bench, and Mo Williams, and J.J. Hickson, and Zotrudis Ogaskis, and you were able to do it. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know, I'm a superstar. I can average 8 points, you know, not 8 points, 8 rebounds, 5, you know, 6 assists, and 25 points a game. You know, I can carry a team. I don't need Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh do it, because remember, even in the beginning of that quote-unquote super dynasty that they had, the big three, they weren't playing 40 minutes a game and complaining about it, because somehow they weren't willing to sacrifice their paycheck so they could get somebody else rather than James Jones to come off the bench. And I'm sorry, but you have to deal with, you have to reap what you sow, LeBron.
But you've got to also keep in mind, Cleveland, right? You've got to keep in mind also, I understand how close it is to you being Cleveland, right? However, you've got to keep in mind that maybe LeBron wasn't the only one steering this. I'm going to go back to Brian Toohey, who was on the show last week, and I'm going to basically state that maybe the real situation is the NBA made it clear that that they want certain markets to have certain players, or not necessarily certain players, but they want certain markets to be at the top or in contention for championships. And a great example of that is when
Chicago and the Bulls with Jordan?
No. I'm going more recent. CP3, Chris Paul. When he originally, he was supposed to have gone to the Lakers.
And then he went to the Clips. Right.
But what was the reason behind him going to the Clips? The Stern made it clear, I'm not going to let that trade go through. Because of what reason? He didn't want a super dynasty. But it's okay to have triplets in Miami. It's okay for him to pick the envelope for Patrick Ewing. It's okay for him to say, okay, in Brooklyn, this is what we're going to have. And I'm telling you, Dwight Howard is going to Brooklyn after this season. I mean, what are the reasons why he would not go?
You know? I think he's going to go. I think somehow the Heat are going to be able to clean house. And you realize that you're having some players. You have to realize that the Heat have almost $2 million in cap space. And at the end of this season, Mike Miller's contract expires at the end of the season. Ray Allen's probably going to retire. James Jones is gone. Udonis Haslam hasn't been Udonis Haslam. And you realize right there that's over $15 million in cap space that they're going to clear out. That's $17 million, my bad. And you're going to have an additional $2 or $3 million. That's $20 million in cap space. And I think that maybe there's a good chance Dwight Howard will go to the Heat. I honestly think that. And it's bound to happen. He's not going to go to Detroit. He's not going to go to Indiana. I mean, maybe he's going to Chicago. Maybe, but Joaquin Noah's developed pretty nicely. And you paid Taj Gibson all that money. So, I don't know. Maybe he'll go to Houston. Maybe he'll see how good that team is doing with James Harden. Or maybe he'll go to Phoenix. You know, we'll never know.
In the beginning, he wanted to go to Brooklyn. Guess what? He's going to go to Brooklyn.
Yeah, but then what are you going to do? You have, you're paying Gerald Wallace, Joe Johnson, Darren Williams' contract expires at the end of this year.
There's only one.
You're paying Andre Bloch $8 million. You know, there's a lot of money you still have. You know, whether you're going to clear it out and have no bench, because Brooklyn actually has one of the very rare things in the East, and that's a very deep backcourt.
The one thing you got to keep in mind in Brooklyn is they're only paying one person exclusive pay. That's Darren Williams. So they still can bring in two more players to pay them. And remember, the NBA doesn't have a hard cap. They have a soft cap. So that means if you go over a certain amount of money, you have to pay the NBA X amount of dollars. For a championship, that new owner from Russia will do it.
Mikhail Prokhorov.
They don't have a hard cap in NBA, just like they don't have one in baseball. You have to pay a luxury tax.
And I think it hurts them because of that.
We're having all three guys talk at once. Go ahead. What do you guys got to say? Because I've been taking up a lot of airtime.
I just think that that the NFL's got the best situation going as far as the salary cap deal. The other two teams the other two leagues are just joking, just playing at it, you know, saying, "Oh, we have a salary cap," but they really don't. And it just allows these teams, the Yankees, you know, the Red Sox, whatever, to spend whatever the hell they want to spend and use the rest of the league as a farm team. You know, and Miami's doing the same thing down in basketball. You know, they're just spending a lot of money to bring home championships.
But what about this, though? What if, here's my comment, that we're starting to see now, especially in a team like the Denver Nuggets, which I respect, here's what I got to say. What if now we're seeing all these, obviously Brooklyn now in that mix. We have New York, Miami, Brooklyn. Maybe you throw in Chicago. Maybe you throw in the Celtics. That's five teams in the East. What about the other 10? What can you do? There's one thing that you can do that will make you maybe even be better than those big market teams. Now, do you gentlemen know what that thing is?
Probably what I do now. Try not to see anything and not support it. What's your response to it?
My response to it is what we could do is that, so those players, so if Miami spends $100 million on their starting rotation, they're not going to pay, you know, the bench all that money. So you're going to have the 45-year-old Jason Kidds, Mike Bibby's, Kurt Thomas, Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace's of the world that are going to be playing, Zlatoudis Ogoskis, they're going to be playing on that bench. What we've seen teams do that I like is you have an average starting five, but off the bench you have some really, really good players. Like if you look at a team, obviously they're a superstar team now, but you look at a team like the LA Clippers, you have Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. You know, you have Eric Bledsoe coming off the bench, Chauncey Billups. You have some nice players that are coming off the bench and supporting you. The Denver Nuggets have Wilson Chandler and Danilo Gallinari, Kenneth Faried, JaVale McGee. You know, they have a lot of, and a bunch of other players. They have some good depth, and they've been able to compete. And especially like a team like the Hawks have a whole heck of a lot of depth. And Zaza Pachulia, obviously you have Lou Williams, and unfortunately you lost him because he's out for the rest of the season. But I think that if you're trying to build a good team, maybe you have a really good starting five, not superstars, but maybe two or three all-star caliber players. But then you fill out the rest of the team with good bench players, and you'll be able to beat a team like the Heat.
No, you won't.
But you have...
You have a decent team that'll make it to the playoffs, but as far as winning championships, you're looking at the Celtics, you're looking at the Heat, you're looking at... Now they want to make the Knicks relevant, and the NBA has made that clear. They want them to be relevant because of the large market that they have lost. So now they're relevant again, and then to bolster that, The New York Nets, back in the ABA and early NBA days, moved over to New Jersey. Now they're back in Brooklyn. Now you have them back in New York. So now you have two teams relevant. And now you got a big, big, big marching party with the country's largest population base. The Clippers is now the relevant team in L.A. He made it clear he only wants one team to be relevant in L.A. because it'll take away from his New York team. You also have what used to be Seattle, now the Oklahoma City Thunder. You've got your Spurs, which is not the which is one that does it the hard way. They actually earn it. And then you who else can you think of outside of those teams that I just mentioned? You have the Chicago Bulls, where they have to be competitive because that's the third largest market in the country. It's not about playing on the same scale in the NBA and baseball. It's about the major population bases and where they want the top players to be. It has nothing to do with the sport itself.
It's about TV revenue money.
That's all
Sadly.
It's about.
Sadly.
It's not about anything else.
It's the network saying, you know, we got to get New York and Los Angeles and Chicago back into the, you know, make them relevant so we can get those big dollars in those cities.
Well, Dallas and Houston, we've obviously seen, unfortunately, the Mavericks go down a little bit, but Houston's a huge market that really hasn't been tapped since
Houston
the Brady
circuit in the country. It's the largest city in the country.
But from a sports standpoint, they could care less because as long as Houston makes the playoffs, they're going to get all their money from China because that's the relationship they have. If you look at the Houston Rockets team and look at the team that Yao Ming bought, their uniforms look identical, and the Chinese backing. Let's move Jeremy Lin down to Houston so that they can have a Chinese delegate so that they can pull those dollars into the NBA as well. It has nothing to do with the sport itself. Hello?
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, we're here. I'm just listening. I'm trying to think of what else to say.
I'm looking at it from a business standpoint. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and go to commercial break right quick so that we can talk about the NFL part one of eight different parts we're going to have.
And the coaching carousel.
The coaching carousel, and the first one up is going to be the Arizona Cardinals. So we're going to go to a commercial break and then come back.
In today's economy, the ability to access data quickly can mean the difference between success and failure. Maximum Archives MyDrive service lets you have access to your data from just about any device and pretty much anywhere. MyDrive makes sure that when it counts, you can get what you need, because failure is not an option. Sign up for MyDrive today at MaximumArchive.com. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's Maximum.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic, great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com, and check it out and order it, Silver Leaf Tea.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream.
Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Jerry with the Sports Addict, and with me today is Cleveland Ray, as always, and Mark Spider, who is the GM of the Seattle Hellcats in DXL and the San Jose Snipers and Red Zone Blitz. Our next topic is talking about the coaching carousel in the NFL. This is our first segment out of eight, and our focus at this point is the Arizona Cardinals. Out was Ken Whisenhunt, in was Bruce Arians. Whisenhunt has a very good background. He was the offensive coordinator for the San Diego Chargers. He was offensive coordinator for the Steelers, and he was also Say again.
Bruce Arians was the offensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts. Wait, are you talking about Arians or not yet?
No,
I'm talking about Whisenhunt. I'm talking about Whisenhunt. And he was also the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals for 6 years. In addition, Arians was the Browns' offensive coordinator from 2001-2003, and he was also with the Steelers from 2007 to 2011. So he took Whisenhunt's place when he left the Steelers, and he was the offensive coordinator and interim head coach in 2012 for the Indianapolis Colts. Now, is this a good move or a bad move? What do you say, Mark?
Well, it's not surprising that they let Whisenhunt go. You know, I think that Kevin Cobb was his guy, so to speak. But quite frankly, that experiment didn't work out. So you could see the handwriting on the wall. If you get an underperforming quarterback and you can't make a team perform without one, and especially in the NFL, if you don't have a decent quarterback, he ain't going anywhere. And so Whisenhunt got the axe. What surprised me is that he didn't get picked up as a head coach anyplace else. And as far as Arians going in and taking over, I feel sorry for him in a way. He was the last guy selected to fill a head coaching job. He's got a real tough road to hoe there. He's going to have to find a quarterback that can perform and stay healthy, which part of their problem there is they need an offensive line. So he's got a bunch of issues to take care of in Arizona. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, and what do you see there, Cleveland Ray?
Cleveland Ray sees that they got a coach who, obviously the Indianapolis Colts had two talented players in Andrew Luck and with Reggie Wayne. But they didn't have, and obviously T.Y. Hilton developed very nicely. But we've been able to see that he can take a team that maybe is flying a little bit under the radar and take them into the playoffs, because Bruce Arians right now, I think, is the coach of the year. There's no doubt about it. Is there anybody else that's in contention for coach of the year besides Bruce Arians at this point in this stage, coming in as an interim head coach and taking them to the playoffs and increasing their wins by over 9? They were one win away from actually winning the entire AFC South, which is a scary thing to think. But
I think Arians did the best job of any coach in the NFL last year, hands down. He should get Coach of the Year. He won't, but he should.
And now he's going to a team with the Arizona Cardinals with a solidifiable superstar wide receiver in obviously Larry Fitzgerald, and obviously, unfortunately, Beanie Wells hasn't been necessarily as healthy as you'd like him to be, but he's a force when he's not, and maybe they go out in free agency and get a quarterback, or maybe they get one in the draft. I don't know, but Bruce Arians has definitely been shown that he can make something. He can definitely make a molehill into a mountain in the most positive way possible.
Well, yeah, but you got to keep in mind too that the expectations in Indianapolis were nil. No one expected them to have a good season. And you're right, he worked magic, but can he do it twice?
Yes.
And Kevin Cobb, a Andrew Luck type of guy. And you got to think too that Andrew Luck threw a lot of passes this year. I mean, they did it with volume out there. Two teams that are kind of similar. Their rushing game was not good in Indianapolis. I mean, it wasn't stellar by any way, shape, or form. Arizona's team, they got some names at running back, but they haven't performed as well as they possibly could. And they got Larry Fitzgerald. They have a stud at wide receiver if they can get somebody to get him the cotton picking ball.
I agree. I think I think Arians is going to – he has two dilemmas in front of him. Number one, the first dilemma is identifying of the quarterbacks you have now, which ones do you not want to give up? Number two, of the quarterbacks that might be in free agency, which one can you nab? Number three, this is dilemma one overall. Number three, of the quarterbacks coming out into the NFL, which one do you covet? And I think between the three of those scenarios, he should end up with two halfway decent quarterbacks that can actually get the ball out of their hands and into someone else's hands on the same team without the ball going astray. The Wisenhunt was not able to make that work. Arians is more of a motivator than anything else as well, so he knows how to get the player involved into wanting to play, and which tells me he's a teacher of the sport. And to me, that's more important than having a guy who's not a teacher of the sport and watching his team go belly up every year and come up with excuses every year. I'm not trying to say anything, Jerry Jones, but I am talking about your team. And every year, it's the same sob story. This guy here doesn't want to hear about sob stories. He doesn't care about sob stories, only from the scenario of he wants sob stories to stay in-house. It's the biggest difference of them all. If he has a problem with the player, he wants to deal with the player, not expose the problem. If the player exposes the problem, then it's on the player, not on him. And he has proven time and time again throughout his coaching career that he's not going to put somebody – he's not going to – what's the saying? I'm not going to drive a bus over you. I'm not going to – I'm not going to throw you under the bus. So – to me, these players need to step up in Arizona, and I think Wisenhunt did not know how to make them step up to the plate, and I think that Arians is going to make that connection. You're going to get better play out of one of these four quarterbacks that they currently have, and don't be surprised if the quarterback is the one that came from Kansas City, because if you really look at all the quarterbacks that they have right now, and Lindley, Shelton, and Kevin Cobb, and the what was the guy's name that came from Kansas City?
He was with
New England. He was the backup to Brady after Castle left.
I'm thinking, but I can't think who he is.
Horan or whatever his name is. I'm looking it up right now. But the bottom line is, those doggone quarterbacks, somebody's going to have to say, okay, I'm going to step up. Or you're going to find that he's going to be in a situation where he's going to say, okay, none of you want to step up, so I'm going to move on without all of you. And don't be surprised if he decides to move on without all of them and he ends up with two quarterbacks like the Washington Redskins did. I would not be surprised in the least bit if that happened. Not at all.
No, and that's not surprising. You know, that is a very, very real scenario. I'm not sure who those quarterbacks would be yet, and the guys that are they're talking about coming out, or guys that are possible trade bait, do they want to try that again? They tried that with Cobb. Do you want to go after a Matt Flynn, for example, in Seattle? You know, he was beat out by a rookie. What does that tell you? You know, of course, then again, that rookie turned out to be pretty special, too. So there's a lot of different things that could happen here. You know, and they got some good tools. They've got some good things going on there in Arizona. They got a solid defense, but unfortunately, them poor buggers were playing, you know, 58 minutes out of a 60-minute game, you know.
So, I agree. I totally agree.
By the end of the year,
it's going to be a tough ride for Arizona. Now, and as bad as the quarterback scenario is, the offensive line is worse. So now do you invest in some free agents that can shore up that offensive line for you? And, you know, the question is how many do you need, because it's been atrocious across the line. But part of the problem could be how really bad certain offensive linemen are, you know, where if you brought in a couple of, not necessarily all-stars, but people that's been in contention for being an all-star, maybe that could help pull the rest of that line together. Because, you know, it's very tough to throw the ball when you're lying on your back. So if that's the case, then you put the right people in place, and how does the old saying go, Mark and Cleveland Ray? You start at the lines on both sides of the ball, and then you work backwards.
Yep.
If you solidify your lines on defense and offense, chances are you're going to be in contention for a playoff spot or Super Bowl.
Yeah, they're needing help everywhere along your offensive line, pretty much. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see him pull the trigger in the draft and go after an offensive tackle, a left tackle. That would go a long way to helping their situation out.
I agree. And then the fact that there's no quarterback that stands out to be a surefire overall number one pick, I can see you going that route and coming back and getting the quarterback in the second round.
Yeah, there should be a good prospect. I'm not saying a great prospect, but a good prospect that you can grab in the second or maybe even in the third round. And then that guy's not – the expectations are lower at that point. That guy's not expected to be the savior of the team like an overall number one pick is, like an Andrew Luck is, or RG3, you know. So the pressure's not on those guys as bad as it is, you know, a second or a third round player. It's not – the pressure's not there to be the savior.
That's true. That's true. And not only is the pressure not on the player, it's not on the coach.
Right. Both ways. It works both ways. So, but if you take an offensive lineman, that helps two ways. It helps get Beanie Wells some yardage and keep him a little healthier maybe, and it gives your quarterbacks a chance perhaps to, you know, stand in the pocket and throw and not get wiped out in the next breath, you know.
I agree. Okay, our next topic is talking about the NBA All-Star team. What we have up to this point is we have the 2013 All-Star teams have been brought up, and on these All-Star teams, it's pretty interesting. Cleveland Ray, in the Eastern Conference, we're looking at Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, Tyson Chandler, Lou Alding, Kevin Garnett, Paul George, Drew Holiday, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Joakim Noah, Rajon Rondo, and Dwayne Wade. What do you see with this team?
A lot of good young talent, and I know Paul George has been under a lot of people's radars, but think about – I'm about to blow your mind. do you realize he's the first player from that 2010 draft that had players like John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Greg Monroe, Al-Tariq Aminu. You know, he is the first player from that quote-unquote very talented draft class, Xavier Henry, Landry Fields. He is the first player from that 2010 draft class to actually make an all-star team, and he was selected 10th overall. The player who was picked right before him, interestingly enough, is Indiana homeboy Gordon Hayward. You have a very, very nice young team. You have a lot of young talent. Paul George, Drew Holiday, and Kyrie Irving. I mean, imagine if those three players right now were all on a team. That would be, I think they would be one of the top three teams in the East. But I think it's interesting the fact that somebody brought up a good point, and I understand he's a center, and he's only averaging 7 rebounds a game, but I think he could make an all-star team, and that is Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez right now is averaging 18 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks for a resurgent Brooklyn Nets team, and not nor him nor Deron Williams made the Eastern Conference All-Stars. But yet you put in a player like Kevin Garnett, who's obviously been declining, and the only reason why he's there is because he's got tenure. Listen, the All-Star game is from the players who are at the top of their game right now, not players who are at the top of their game 5 years ago. I'm sorry, Kevin, but you just can't continue to give these old players spots. You have 2 Bulls players. Obviously, defensive player of the year candidate Joaquin Noah, then Luol Deng, both players who are basically helping the Bulls into a playoff spot at this point in time. And you have 2 Knicks, you know. You have only 1 76er, 1 Pacer, 1 Cavalier, and I think it's interesting. But I think the East has some nice young talent. I think more so, they have more nice young talent than the West, dare I say. But I don't know what to think. A lot more defensive minded players in the West, I'll tell you that right now.
Okay, and then the Western Conference, what we have is LaMarcus Aldridge from Portland, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, James Harden, Dwight Howard, David Lee from Golden State, Tony Parker, Chris Paul, Zach Randolph from Memphis, and Russell Westbrook. You're saying that there's more talent in the East. I'm going to go back the other way and say, I think you need to check yourself before you wreck yourself. I think the talent's in the West because of the fact that they can do what the East does and have defense.
Well, you bring up a good point. And the reason why I said that, I said young talent. The only player who's really, really young on this roster is LaMarcus Aldridge, who's 25, and then Russell Westbrook, who's only 21, 22.
They're not the only one. They're not the only one.
No, I know, but you have a lot of older players. You have Kobe Bryant's. You have Tim Duncan's. You have Tony Parker's. You have Zach Randolph's. And you have David Lee's, who are a little bit older. So I think the three young guards can kind of, guards and forwards in the East can kind of give them a little bit more run for their money. Just future-wise. Just keep in mind, the West haven't had a lot of top picks. The East has. Only 2 or 3 Western teams have had top picks, and those are the Hornets, the Timberwolves, and obviously the Portland Trailblazers. And we're seeing all those teams, and Sacramento Kings, of course, who have all just become, who I think, obviously, I think it's a coaching problem in Sacramento. They should be in a playoff contention right now.
I agree.
But, and I think it's ridiculous they're not. I think it's appalling that they're not. But point aside from that, I think it's interesting Stephen Curry didn't make it, but a player like – sorry, I got cut off there for a second. But Tony Parker did. Now, I understand Tony Parker's putting up good numbers, but Stephen Curry is averaging like 22 points, like 6 or 7 assists and 2 steals. And he's been the person, besides David Lee, who's averaging 19 points and 9 rebounds for the Warriors – who's led them into a resurgence. And I think it's outstanding. But, I mean, if you look at it again, you have players who have tenure. Dwight Howard should not be starting. Yes, Dwight Howard's doing well. He's averaging 20 points, but he's only averaging 9 rebounds. This is the lowest time in his career at the age of 26 or 27 Do you realize his rookie year when he was 18 years old, he averaged more rebounds than he did, than he's doing right now? Just to put that into perspective.
I'm gonna ask you two questions, and I'm really curious to hear what your answer is. From a defensive standpoint in the West, which one player stands out the most from a defensive standpoint?
Defensive has to be Chris Paul. Chris Paul has led the league in steals 5 times in his young career already. Obviously I think the best all-around guard in the NBA right now. He can score, he can dish, he can rebound if he needs to, and he can definitely create possessions with the steal. He is the best defensive player in the West. Obviously, Tim Duncan is not.
Okay, now, do you think Kobe Bryant is a good defensive player?
He gets steals a lot, but he's kind of, when he was younger, yes, he did do pretty good on the defensive end, but as getting older, no, he's more focusing, holy cow.
Slow down.
I will. More so focusing on his offensive game, which will keep him in the game longer than the defensive, because offensive doesn't take as much off of you as running around on the defensive end is.
Okay. Now, which player on the East do you think can actually control Kobe Bryant in the same position?
Paul George, no doubt in my mind. Paul George is right now the best wing defender in the – only second, in my opinion, to Chris Paul. Number one wing defender in the Eastern Conference. Paul George right now is averaging a steal and a half on top of a block. He has potential to be future defensive player of the year, in my opinion.
So
I
Paul
think he
George,
has better chances than Anthony Davis.
Is Paul George playing shooting guard or point guard?
Paul George plays shooting guard, small forward.
There you go. Okay. Now, outside of Paul George, is there anyone else?
Rondo can play some good defense, but Rondo's a guard, point guard. Dwayne Wade can. I'm not sure so about Drew Holiday and Kyrie Irving, who more rely on their offensive games.
Let's talk about the starters one against the other. Okay, in the one position, we're looking at Chris Paul versus Rajon Rondo.
Very interesting matchup.
And the edge goes to?
Wow. who's going to do better or who will outdo the other? What do you mean? Just like?
You actually said the same thing in two different ways.
I know, and that's what I just realized. Oh, man. You got to give it. Although Rajon Rondo has been able to put up numbers I couldn't even put up on NBA 2K13 on easy mode, I think it's got to be Chris Paul. Chris Paul can score 20 points, grab 8 rebounds, dish out 10 assists, and steal the ball 3 times. Rajon Rondo can do all that except he'll score 10 points. I'm sorry, Rajon, but if you get your scoring up, if you get your scoring better, I think you could be one of the top all-around players in the NBA, but Chris Paul, there's nobody that really can. That was a tough question. Wow.
And the next question is, at the 2 spot, we're looking at Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant.
Bryant.
What are you looking at there?
Bryant, just because his scoring ability is so fantastic, you can't deny how good of an offensive player he still is. He can score from anywhere on the floor, and he can even be clutch. Take that, LeBron James. So, I got to give it to Bryant. There's just nobody at this point in time that can really match his offensive efficiency.
Okay, and the 3 spot, what we're looking at is Carmelo Anthony, and we're also looking at
Kevin Durant, probably.
Kevin Durant. That's exactly what I was going.
Again, these are really tough ones because most people would be really happy with either. No, if a team had one of these players, they'd be ecstatic. I like Kevin Durant a lot on his offensive game. Again, I think he will score the most points in NBA history when everything's said and done. I think that. Ever since he won his first scoring title, I think he has the potential to do it. But
okay.
Carmelo Anthony just has is more aggressive and more physical, and I think he'll be able to beat up on Kevin Durant a little bit more and give him a rougher time.
Because so you're going with?
I'm going with Carmelo Anthony.
Okay. At the fourth spot, we're looking at
LeBron James versus Blake Griffin, most likely.
That is absolutely correct, where I was going.
Oh, man. This is the toughest one of them all. Oh, man. They're both good. They're both good charge drawers. They're both good scorers. I think Griffin, because Griffin's a natural four, while LeBron's more of a natural three player. So I think Blake Griffin will have a more advantage because he'll be able to grab more rebounds and beat up on LeBron more on the in the paint area.
Okay. That brings us to the five spot, Kevin Garnett against Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard. Kevin Garnett shouldn't even be in an All-Star game. He's way too old. The fact of the matter that he's there because of what most teachers in schools have is tenure. His name is acknowledgeable, you know. I'm surprised Jason Kidd's not in an All-Star game just because his name's recognizable and he's a future All-Star, or Dirk Nowitzki is, you know. Dwight Howard, even though he has been more soft in the paint than he has in any year from his past, he still is better than old man Garnett.
So what you just told me was 4-1, you're going with the West, even though you just recently said that the East is better.
East have a better bench. No, I said the East have better young talent. That's what I said.
I just threw that out there to poke at you a little bit, Cleveland, right? Who did you see as from the layout? Who do you see as the team to beat in the All-Star game?
The team to be in the All-Star game, unfortunately, because their depth is so great and their All-Star power is so good, has to be the West. The East does have three very, very, very nice young players in Paul George, Drew Holiday, and Kyrie Irving. By the way, all under the age of 23. While the West does have two nice young players in Russell Westbrook and James Harden, but a lot of their – and Kevin Durant's 25, so not sure.
Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is not 25.
24. But
he'll be 24 later on this year, correct?
No, he's going to be 25. His birthday's September 29th, 2008. Not 2008. 88. So he turned 24 last year in September.
Right.
How you sidetracked me. Thank you. I appreciate that. Just because their depth is more good. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is coming off the bench, and he's going to replace Dwight Howard. And Tim Duncan, Mr. Fundamental, is going to replace Blake Griffin. So you have a nice combination of players who are at their prime versus players who are at the tail end of their prime, can still put up numbers, because a year ago, I was fortunate enough to see Tim Duncan here in Cleveland, and let me tell you something. Although he is not once the athlete he is, he is incredible. Because he can just do even the most basic and simple things so fundamentally well, he can still grab 17 points and still grab 10 or 11 rebounds a game.
I think he understands the secret to teamwork. He's really focused on teamwork more so than most of the other All-Stars.
Exactly. He's not selfish, you know. But it's kind of weird to think that the other two or three All-Star players on his roster, two of them, DeJuan Blair and Manu Ginobili, were second round picks. Tony Parker was a late first round pick. He was 30th overall. And then you had Kawhi Leonard, who was drafted 15th overall by the Pacers 2 years back and got shipped to the Spurs for Paul George. Not Paul George. George Hill. So I think it's interesting to think that most of their talent, they've defied any single type of NBA thing. They have fantastic scouting. The fact, and Greg Popovich has just shown how much of a great coach he is. The fact that he can develop this talent, two second-round picks that are starting, and one who's a former All-Star, one who's a 6'7 dominant power forward, is incredible to me. In a late first-round pick, 30th overall, who's contended multiple times for an MVP, I think it's just outstanding. It's incredible to think that they have defied every single kind of obstacle thrown in their way.
Understand. Okay, our next topic is Ryan Leaf getting sent to state prison. What a trip this one is. Mark, what do you have to say about Ryan Leaf since he's a Washington State Cougar? And you've been
sure.
A Cougar.
Bring that up because I'm a Cougar fan. Sure. Had to do it. You just had to go there, didn't you? Trying to forget about this.
I had to.
It's not surprising. I was just reading through this article here a little bit, and he's still facing charges in Texas from when he was a coach down there for the same thing, stealing prescription painkillers. Ryan Leaf is pretty much old news. Who really gives a turkey anymore, really, you know? His problems are his problems. He got moved out of the treatment center that he was at, a low security deal, into prison because he was having thinking errors. I'm not sure exactly what the hell that means, but it sounds pretty ambiguous to me. If a man's thoughts can get you moved to prison, then I think we're all in trouble.
That's true. I don't understand these thinking errors. I don't.
Yeah, I read through that article. I don't understand that either. I guess if you have violent thoughts or something to that effect, you're supposed to tell your counselor, I guess, that, you know, tell them about it. Well, if you're going to punish a guy for that, doesn't that mean that I'm not telling you what I'm thinking? Is that counterproductive?
Very much so.
But, again, when you were just reading this article here, what does that really say? I mean, I don't know.
He's
there for a while. I guess that's about the bottom line of the whole thing.
What did you think, both of you guys, what do you think is the real issue with this guy Ryan Leaf? Do you think it stems from the fact that maybe he had some serious hits while he was in college? Do you think it stems from that, or do you think it's from the NFL? I'm looking at it from the NFL standpoint, but he wasn't there long enough to say anything. Or do you think it's based on the fact that he was unable to deal with the media being so intense and all over the place, or do you think he's in a situation where it's his talent that did not come across and did not come on the table like it was projected to be? What do you think?
I just think that there's a very good story that's not very much so told. When you're interviewed before you're about to be drafted for the NFL, the Indianapolis Colts interviewed Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning. The final question of the interview is, what are you going to do with your first bonus? And this is when the Colts had the number one overall pick for Peyton Manning versus the Ryan Leaf shabacle. Peyton Manning's answer was, I'm going to use the money to purchase a video equipment so I can tape football games and watch them and analyze defenses to see how I can make myself a better quarterback and read defenses better. Okay. Want to guess what Ryan Leaf's answer was?
What was that?
Ryan Leaf's answer was, I'm going to take me and all my buddies to Cancun for a two-week getaway at the end of the season with my bonus. So let that speak volumes about the player.
Another thing, too, is Peyton Manning was, right before his interview, he was there 45 minutes prior. Ryan Leaf did not show up. That's the other part. That's the other side of it. They had to create a second interview to get Ryan Leaf there because he failed to show on the first one. And you're right. It's all about priorities. How about you, Mark? How do you see this one?
Yeah, that's pretty much right. I mean, I don't know what Mike Price did with him in how he kept him out of the media. Maybe because he played in Pullman, for crying out loud, you know, and nobody knew anything about it. But the guy has proved that he's got, you know, a $15 million arm and a 5-cent head ever since he got into the NFL, or even before he got into the NFL. So San Diego, when they took him, you know, they were doubling down heavy duty on that he was going to come through for him, and he didn't. You know, that meltdown that he had on that was very publicized, I can't remember what player he was criticizing, one of his teammates he was criticizing after a game or after practice in that locker room where he jumped on down his throat. Doesn't make any difference. That showed right there that the guy had a problem. And he lost the locker room at that point. It was all over but the crying after that, you know.
I agree. I totally agree. It's very difficult to oversee these guys when they go through the scenarios they go through. It hurts me to my heart to see such wasted talent, especially when they're chosen so high. And for the most part, the only highlight we got out of this guy was the fact that he's stealing from other people's homes or stealing from businesses so that he can support a habit of painkillers. And that's the reason why I brought up that particular scenario, because I'm stunned that he requires painkillers because he really didn't play in the NFL that long, which tells me that there's a, you know, maybe part of his problem was the fact that he was on these things in college. I think he played more. He had more time in college than he did in the NFL. I'm not sure.
I remember right, and you know, after that Rose Bowl game that they ended up losing, but I don't think he took that many hits in college and like that. So his addiction to painkillers, I think, is, I don't want to call it a personal choice, but I think that's become his drug of choice. For some people, it's cocaine or whatever the case happens to be, booze, whatever. In his case, I think it's painkillers.
Interesting. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go to station break, and some of the topics that we're going to bring up after we get back is going to be Tim Tebow being forced to the Jets. Based on the owner of the Jets is saying, Earl Weaver dying and Sam Musial dying on the same day. So stay tuned. We're going to go ahead and go to a station break at this point.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up
to bring you
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is Jerry from Sports Addict, and with me today is Cleveland Ray. And
hello!
And on with us right now is Jeremy Brown from Ultimate Sports Cars. How are you today, Jeremy?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Just doing to let everybody really, know,
hold on for a sec. Just to let everybody know, Jeremy Brown is located with Ultimate Sports Cars at 450 Fremont Street in Las Vegas, Nevada, inside Neonopolis. Hey, go ahead, Cleveland Brown. I'm sorry.
Cleveland Brown. I'm not sure who Cleveland Brown is, but that's okay.
Cleveland Ray, I'm sorry.
My day is about as bright as Rick's bald head when it's shiny from the Pawn Stars. That's how good my day is right now. But that's just me. Now, Jeremy, I know we're going to talk sports here in a second, but I'm very curious. I was one of the first people, like when it first came out, to start watching the TV show Pawn Stars. And I obviously know that you're a gentleman who comes on a lot of the times and has inspected things like a Cy Young card. And I've been very curious, what are the people like? Are the people, is Corey, is Chumley, are all of them the exact same way off camera like they are on camera?
Pretty much. I mean, I'll be honest, like before I got involved with the show, I'm a cynic by nature, and I personally thought it was full of crap. You know, I thought it was all staged, I thought it was all an act. And honestly, I was very surprised. Once I got involved with the show, it was a lot more genuine. These guys are a lot more true to character than I thought they would be. Rick is as every bit as intelligent in real life as he appears on the show. Corey's very ambitious. He's really good at what he does. Chum's Chum, he knows his place. But he's a
what
great
word
guy.
Do you use to describe Chumley? I'm not even sure if there's a word.
There isn't. I think it's like one of these things, like his name just kind of sums it up. It's, you know.
That was very good.
And the old man is very grouchy, or does he lighten up at all? Or is
he's
he
all right. I mean, he has his moments. He's very old school, and, you know, you have two different factors going on. Number one, you have a fully functioning pawn shop, and then you have this production crew that's making this thing into a giant phenomenon. So, of course, the production crew's goal is to get as much great footage as they can, where the pawn shop, you know, they want to do it, of course, but then they want to get open so they can do business. So, you know, he'll get a little grouchy as scenes kind of drag on longer than they should. But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody's, you know, they're grateful for the opportunity. So, you know, everybody gets along. Just, of course, inevitably, sometimes things drag on, and that's when it sometimes causes slight friction, but not really an issue.
Last question I have about the Pawn Stars, then we'll get into the sports conversation. I am very curious. When they bring items onto the show, like they have to choose three, maybe four items to show in a 30-minute period, how now does the production company shoot everybody that comes into the store? Because I think it's a little weird and conspicuous how they'll show the store completely packed, but then all of a sudden this person comes in and it looks like nobody's been in there since 1941. So how do they decide what items get shown on the television show versus, like, Joe Schmo's 1941 Lionel toy train set? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, what they do is they film, I mean, just kind of a roundabout number, anywhere from like 4 to 6 different scenes a day. And, you know, they do that every day, Monday through Friday. And then the production company on their end, they put all the stuff together and then they build the segments. So, I mean, they might have a scene that was shot a year ago mixed with one that was shot last week, mixed with one that was like 6 months ago. They build it to have a good variety for each 30-minute show. So, you know, each item that you see not necessarily came in the same day. It's just they edit it, so they basically can make a good show that has a little, so it's not just all guns, or not going to be just all sports items. They have, like, a little bit of appeal for everybody.
So do they, so then, the last little thing I'll add on, do they photograph everybody that comes in and try and sell something, or only certain people, or, because I assume, Abraham Lincoln's, you know, Q-tip, it might be more interesting than Joey's 1999 Mark McGuire card, you know.
Right. And so, the thing is, what they do is they tell everybody by default. Of course, all the sellers want to know, hey, when's my show going to air? And their default answer, it could be 2 weeks to 2 months to 2 years to never. And, for instance, there's probably around 20 of my things that have aired so far, and I've probably filmed at least another 30 or 40 that have not, including the very first one I ever shot. So, even if it is a cool item, if it doesn't come out well, you know, after editing and all that, they're not going to show it. You know, it's got to be good for TV, of course, an interesting item, a good scene and all that. So there are a lot of factors that go into it. You know, they're selective on what gets aired.
All right, and I appreciate that very much. I was a big Pawn Stars homer when it first came out. I haven't been fortunate enough to watch it more, but I remember you really know your stuff, man, and everybody in the Vegas, Southern Utah, Eastern California, Northern Arizona territory should check you out. I think they'd be disappointed if they weren't.
Yeah, it's been a great opportunity. It's a lot of fun. They keep me on my toes, and, you know, it's just an amazing. I'm just so grateful that I got involved with these guys. It's been great for my business. It's been a hell of a lot of fun too.
Jeremy, I've actually met you face to face. And I've actually asked you some questions, and to be honest, one of the questions I was trying to see, I actually reworded a question to see if I get a different answer. And I'm gonna tell you something: you're extremely knowledgeable, and your responses were on point. You did not, I mean, you know your stuff, and I've been very hands off a little bit when it comes to like ultimate sports cards and so forth, but you could probably tell by the way I was forking out my Ringer cards from the past that I was very, very, very comfortable in your surroundings, and you basically stated information. You know, it's out there. This is what I know about it. Next, you know, you did not put Frosties on top of it or sugar on top. You told it like it was, and I totally appreciate that. And that's the reason why I will always go to you and over to Ultimate Sports Cards to look up another set of cards, of which you don't be surprised if I show up today or tomorrow. But I will always go to you because of the fact that I know I'm going to get a straight answer from you. And your staff is also the same way.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Now,
I go ahead, Cleveland Ray.
No, go ahead, man. I've clogged up enough there as it is. Go ahead, Jerry. What's your question for the man?
My next question is, based on what you see today, the last time we were talking on Proof Negative show, one of the things that you came up with that we talked about as a threesome was the fact that certain, individual statistics drive a card up or down, but you also mentioned what they do and how much volume is involved as well. What did you think about the fact that we've had some crazy times in 2012 with Colin Kaepernick taking over as quarterback in the NFL? What does this do?
Jeremy Lin in New York.
This is something I've been telling everybody because it absolutely blows my mind. In this industry, the trends are just so ridiculous sometimes. It's almost comical. Like going back to basketball last year with Jeremy Lin, I mean, his stuff just, he came out of nowhere. His stuff spiked, and now it's worth pennies on the dollar from where it was. I mean, it's still worth more than it used to be, but, you know, everything has a certain window where it goes for premium. So you take a guy like Colin Kaepernick. All right, he's maybe won 5 or 6 games, give or take, in his whole career. Yeah, he's showing flashes of greatness. He's entertaining to watch, and he's winning games. Now you take a guy like Joe Flacco for the Ravens, the quarterback there. You know, I think he has like 5 postseason wins, and, you know, granted, he's a young guy. His rookie was in 2008. So you have an established quarterback who has a proven winning record. The team, the Ravens, are always competitive, whether you like him or not. And yet, his stuff sells for less than Colin Kaepernick, and that just blows my mind. You know, just because Kaepernick is more relevant right now, and everybody wants his items, and his things are going for such a ridiculous premium that he's outselling, in my opinion, a guy who's got a superior track record and more proven. But that's the nature of the industry. You know, there's a lot of these trends, and a lot of people make a lot of money riding these things when you buy low, sell high, you know, times like this.
Right. And go ahead, Cleveland, right?
Obviously, you're a very knowledgeable man of sports cards. Now, here's my question. I am a semi-avid baseball card collector, and I stumbled upon, about a year ago, a baseball card from 1908 from a baseball player. He's actually a Hall of Famer by the name of Fred Clark. Are you familiar with the name at all?
I want to say it sounds familiar. A lot of the guys from the turn of the century, the Hall of Famers, I've seen, you know, their names before. I couldn't tell you which team he was affiliated with off the top of my head. But, you know, just because they have cards, I've seen so many cards, it sounds familiar, yeah.
He was on that early Pirates dynasty with Honus Wagner. So
okay.
Just that way. Now, here's my question. I got it. It's kind of beaten up a little bit. But I got it for like $35. Now, here's the thing that kind of was interesting to me. Let me grab it real quick.
Sure.
When I got the card, you know what, Jerry, can you ask him something while I look for the card?
What I have on Fred Clark is that as a player, he played for the Louisville Colonels from 1894 to 1899 and for the Pittsburgh Pirates from 1900 to 1911 and then again from 1913 to 1915. That was as a player. As a manager for the Louisville Colonels, 1897 to 1899. So while he was a player, he was also a manager there except for 3 years. And he also was a manager from 1900 to 1915 for Pittsburgh, and all of the years he played except for one was 1912. He has one World Series championship in 1909, 4 National League pennants, 1901, 1902, 1903, and 1909. And managerial record, 1,602 games. He won he lost 1,181. 7th most triples in Major League history with 220. 11 seasons with a 300-plus batting average. 5 seasons with a 100-plus run scored. And
so
he was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1945.
So he's an early ballot. Okay.
Yeah, he was selected by the old time committee. Now, do you think I got the card for $35?
Okay.
And it's kind of beat up. I mean, it's 1908. So what do you expect? It's got a Piedmont cigarette of quality advertisement on the back.
Yeah.
Do you think I got a good deal on it, it only being $35?
Well, a couple factors. I mean, sight unseen, it's tough because condition on that card, it can sell for $5 or probably $10,000 if it was, you know, immaculate. But, you know, just a rule of thumb, you know, kind of beat up, not great condition, just regular schmoes, you know, they can go for $15 to $30 a piece. Now, taking consideration, it sounds like it's not completely trashed and it's a Hall of Famer, I think you got a hell of a deal. Now, as far as the back, you mentioned it was Piedmont. You know, back then, you know, these things were used as marketing promotions, you know, instead of actually collectibles. You know, everyone just put the brand of the cigarettes or tobacco on the back. And there's about, I want to say, 8 different variations to the backs, you know, some of which are more common than others, some of which are a lot more scarce and actually have, you know, will increase the premium. Now, you said Piedmont. That's Piedmont and Sweet Caporal are the two most common ones you find. And then, you know, like I said, there's about 6 or 7 different ones beyond that, that if you find it, you know, they're worth, you know, 1.5 times, 2 times, 5 times, 6 times, just because they're a lot more scarce to find. But the answer to the question is, I think any way you look at it, you got a hell of a deal on, you know, a 100-plus-year-old card of a Hall of Fame player.
Now, here's my thing. How do I see if it's maybe, dare I even say, if this card's fake or not? Because when I got the card, I had a guy inspect it.
Yeah.
But he happened to be buddies with this dude. He had a little, you know what I'm talking about, it's like a little microscope thingy where you can look into the card.
Yeah.
And there were little dots, and it said that's how you can tell it's an old card, is because of the dots that are on the card.
Right.
Now, but I look on the internet that following night, and it said if it's made with the little dots, that it's fake, that it's been printed off. So, I mean, I even, here's how, don't judge me, but one of the ways that I tried to see if it was old is to see if it had a odor, and it did. So, what do you think? I obviously know, unfortunately, I live in Cleveland, and you're obviously all the way in sunny Las Vegas. Do you think, like, do you think maybe I got ripped, it's a fake card, or how can I tell if it's fake or not?
Well, Jeremy, before you answer that question, hold on for a sec. What's the card number, Cleveland, right?
They don't have card numbers on those.
They don't have card numbers back in the day.
Like in the American price guide, they'll just list them alphabetically. Yeah, they didn't have card numbers in that series.
Okay.
It says baseball series 150. Oh, that's the Piedmont advertisement. Never mind.
Yeah.
The main thing,
if somebody brings in, we see these cards, you know, at least once a week, somebody's going to bring in, whether it's, you know, a Ty Cobb or just a common card. We see them quite often. And it's hard to say without seeing it, but the texture, the surface, the paper, that's the very first thing that we look for. And quite honestly, yeah, eventually if I have other doubts, I'll smell the thing too, because that odor, you can't counter, well, I'm sure you could with some technology, but very tough to fake that old odor. But the paper stock is number one as far as what we use to determine if it's genuine or not. You know, just the texture of it, we'll run a thumb over it lightly and see how it feels in our hand compared to others we felt. But, yeah, you know what? It's not odd that you smell it. People look at me when I smell their things like, is this guy insane or whatever? But we do that too, so I get you.
Wow.
Jerry, do you have any questions? I got another one if you don't. It's about
I have a couple of questions. But it's going to go towards actual sports right now. But go ahead, Cleveland, right?
I got to ask you something. Why do you keep thinking my name's Caleb? That's such a terrible, weird name. I don't think anybody would name their child that. That's such a weird. Anyway, is there somebody you know around my age named Caleb?
Possibly.
Well, it's Vegas. There's only what, a couple million people there. Card question I have related. I definitely know this is for real. I got an old Harmon Killebrew card from 1958. It's actually from his first full year when he played with the Nationals. So it's when he was on the Washington Nationals, and I got it for $20. But I go online and I see that it's worth like $50. It's kind of like. Like I got really lucky. I got an old pack of Bauman cards for 99 cents that has never been opened, and surely enough, there's a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I was wondering, do you think did I get a steal? And the Killebrew card's in really good shape, might I add. Do you think maybe it's worth more because there's a chance it could possibly be his rookie card, or what do you think?
Well, it's not going to be his rookie. Rookie for Killebrew is 1955 tops. So 50,
okay.
So 5, 6, 7, 8. So it's a fourth-year card as far as the industry is concerned. I don't know the book value off the top of my head. I'd probably say it would book for around 40 to 50 bucks in X-Men to near mint condition. And then, you know, that's kind of like your tobacco card. That card, if it's mangled, is only worth a few cents, you know, to a few bucks. And if it's gem mint, I wouldn't, you know, it'd sell for thousands of dollars, you know. As, you know, obviously, like you always hear, you know, my mom threw away my cards when I went to school or to the war, or I put them on my bike spokes. So cards from those years are rare, and then in cards in good shape are exceedingly rare. So, you know, the grade, each half point on a 10-point scale, it goes up. As it gets higher, it gets exponentially more expensive because they're hard to find. So, you know, it's tough to say how good of a deal you got without seeing it, but I would say, you know, 20 bucks for Harmon Killebrew, 1958, that's pretty safe no matter which way you look at it.
Last thing,
wow.
And it's not about any of my cards, but it's about just the future of sporting memorabilia in general. I went to a card show, and there was a guy who was selling these stacks of cards of like 1,000 cards for 20 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him why he was selling them for so cheap, and he goes, because the market for these cards is not what it used to be, and I don't think it'll ever get bigger anymore. I'm not trying to badmouth the sporting card industry. Please understand that. But I'm curious, do you think that the market for sports cards and sports memorabilia is slowly declining?
Nope, it's quite the opposite. It is rising fast. And what that guy probably had, and we see this all day, every day, and it is what it is. Cards from manufactured in the 1980s to early, mid-1990s, short of a few key rookies, are practically worthless. They made millions and billions and billions of these things. You know, I even heard, and I'm not sure if this is an exact quote, but I just read it on some website. At one point in the early 90s, I think it was one of the top sets or something, they made, you know, whatever the production was, basically every person, man, woman, and child in America could have 325 cards. So you do the
wow.
math, and then there's billions of these things that they made. So oversaturation up until about, I would say the hobby nearly died up until like the strike season, 94, you know, when the World Series and all that. And then that was kind of a turning point. You know, people started losing interest in baseball. They get a foul taste in their mouth. People's collections were declining rapidly because all the values were coming out and coming down because everybody made too much. So since then, all these companies have retooled their thought process. They made a lot less. They started inserting autographs and rare inserts and things like that. And nowadays, it's strong. It's very strong today because they compensated for all the shortcomings and overproduction that they experienced. And what that guy was selling, you know, 20 bucks for 1,000 cards, you know, to the collector, that's a great deal. I'll be honest, we had in my shop at our old location a 5,000 count monster box. Now, mind you, I sell the empty box for people for storage for $5. I had 5,000 cards in there, and it took me 3 years to sell that box for $8. So basically, I sold 5,000 cards for $3 in a two-year span. You know, there's so many of them out there. They're hard to sell. Nobody wants them. Everybody just wants the really old stuff or the really new stuff. A lot of the in-betweens, it's just not happening these days, man.
Wow.
Very much. Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, maybe too many.
And now to go on a current player side, Jeremy, what did you with the upcoming Super Bowl? Two questions. Number one, who are you looking at for Super Bowl champion in 2013?
Well, I would prefer the 49ers to do it, but I think the Ravens are going to do it. And the Ravens clinched, I didn't look at the spread or anything. I guessed what the spread would be, and it was exactly the opposite. I figured Ravens point-and-a-half favorite, and they're the underdog by point-and-a-half. And I want to say now it's pretty even. I want to say I've seen a lot of casinos having just picked the winner. I think the Ravens are going to do it, although I prefer the 49ers personally. The reason I say that. You know, the both teams, it's amazing how well they match up. I mean, you have strong defenses, you have fast-paced offenses. Both teams had a mid-season change. The 49ers had a quarterback change. The Ravens had an offensive coordinator change. But the Ravens had the edge on experience significantly. And I think the road that the Ravens took to get there was a lot more difficult, going through teams like New England and what have you. So that's why I give the edge to the Ravens.
Okay. And as far as Tim Tebow is concerned, how does he value with sports cards?
Sadly, not nearly as much as he came out in 2010 when it was rookie year. It started off a little low, but he had a big following from Florida. And then when he started winning games in Denver, his stuff just soared. I mean, such a great feel-good story. You know, he was very well loved by his teammates. He's winning. He's unconventional. Then he goes to the Jets and starts tapering off. And then they realize, hey, he's not even getting a chance to play. So his items still sell for a little bit more for considering he's a backup, but his stuff already ran its course. I mean, we're never going to see that kind of dollar that we saw, you know, a year and a half ago when he was winning in Denver.
And also now the question is, what from a sports card, regardless of sport, what cards seem to be on the rise right now, and which cards are also looking at the as a whole from a sports standpoint looking like a decline?
Well, like this year, up until the playoffs, like Doug Martin's stuff started heating up exponentially. Adrian Peterson started increasing again, just because a lot of people were scared of his injury, and then he came out and had a 2,000-yard campaign. So during the year, their stuff was rising. Robert Griffin III rose tremendously up until his injury and then his elimination, and then kind of tapered off. Andrew Luck was hot all year, started off a little slow, but as he won, his cards increased as well. Hottest person right now, I mean, it's usually it's Kaepernick, hands down. I mean, his things are selling for absolutely insane amount of money online right now. And long term, I mean, this is the time to sell him, quite honestly, because I just don't know how he projects long term. I mean, he's great, but I haven't seen enough of him to jump on the bandwagon yet.
Right, right. Wow. Is there any of the Las Vegas sports athletes from your standpoint that actually stick out as far as players like the kid, the rookie of the year for the who is it? I want to say the Washington Nationals.
Stephen Strauss. Bryce Harper.
What about him?
Yeah,
how is this card doing?
It's so solid. I mean, last year you had, you know, two huge rookies, one in the AL, one in the NL. Bryce Harper, and then of course Mike Trout for the Angels in the AL. And the two of them, they were the leading. I mean, just amazing sales online, values. Their rookies just really took off. Now Mike Trout actually would outsell Bryce Harper for a couple reasons. Number one, there's less of his stuff out there than Bryce. Bryce was the number one pick overall, so anytime you have the number one pick, the card manufacturers, they realize, hey, this guy's good. We're going to try to make more of his items so we can better market our products. So there's a little bit more Bryce stuff out there than Trout, and everybody expected good stuff out of Bryce, so they might have been on his bandwagon for a little bit, where Trout literally came out of nowhere. You know, I think he had limited action the previous season, didn't do anything phenomenal, and this year he just blew up. So, you know, these two guys going into this following season, both going to be on the start opening day rosters, having a full complement at bats, you know, because if you expand what Bryce Harper did in his limited at bats, he would have had a great season. So,
true.
Myself and everybody else are very excited to see what he's going to do, you know, with all the talent around him as well in Washington.
I agree. And, I mean, it doesn't hurt one bit to have a Strasburg on your team and other talented players as well. I totally agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeremy, do you have any questions for us as far as, from a sports standpoint? Or another question is, in hockey, did this strike that they just have, did that hurt some of the, from a sports car standpoint, did that really hurt them?
Yes. And just like it did in basketball the previous year, what the problem is with the industry is, you know, with the rookies especially, because the hobby usually is driven by rookies. You know, every year you have a new rookie class. People want the next and best great players. Well, like basketball, what they did a couple of years back is they pretty much put a hold on all their rookies because of the lockout. So that year the product suffered, where the following year they put 2 years of rookies in the products and they've been strong. And I've noticed even like with guys like Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, the bigger players, a lot of the things – we're a little bit soft. And as the talks got better and then when the season was committed to, I started seeing a rise because people started getting excited for the sport again. But sadly, you know, lockouts and things like this, they do have an adverse effect on the industry.
Okay. And do you have any questions for Cleveland Ray or myself, or both of us?
Here, I'll ask you guys a question everybody asks me. What's wrong with the Los Angeles Lakers?
Actually, there's nothing wrong with them. What I see right now is what I thought was going to happen. I actually predicted this long ago. I felt that they were going to implode. If you really look at it, we have to look at management. The best management needed to put a coach in place, and they had Mike Brown. And he had five games as a head coach for the L.A. Lakers, and they fired him. He went 1-4.
Right.
Now, interim coach Bernie Bickerstaff, he actually went 4-1 or 3-2 with the five games while they were deciding on who was going to be the next coach. For the type of team they have, an aging team, to have a up-tempo run-and-gun team was the wrong answer. But the problem is that there's internal issues with the Lakers as far as who should be the head coach versus who is a family member. I'm going to say Phil Jackson should have been the right choice because you could have played the triangle offense and it would have actually given the Lakers an opportunity to be the to be more effective, per se, to put them in a situation where you want a 37-year-old, 35 or 36 or 37-year-old Nash.
Guard.
And to have Pau Gasol over 30 and Dwight Howard, who's injury-prone, and then you have Kobe Bryant that's like, you know, he's the oldest guy on the team for the most part.
Steve Nash is 55.
Exactly. But to put them in a situation where they're going to, that you want them to run and gun. And we just realized that D'Antoni just got fired from the Knicks because of a middle of the road team in the sense of age. They fired him because it wasn't effective there. And you have a better running team there. To put that in LA with an aging team was a huge problem on the ownership, and to allow the ownership basically has to take the hit for this one, because they actually picked the wrong guy. Now the reason why they picked D'Antoni over Jackson was because of the family squabble, because the owner's sister is getting ready to get married to Phil Jackson, he don't like Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson doesn't like him. And you have the mess called the Lakers. And I think Magic Johnson called it best. He said, no time is back in L.A. Let's go see the Clippers. I mean, it's that simple. You know, it's nothing personal, like, except for the two individuals, you know, the two entities that are squabbling. You got Jeannie Buss and you got the son. You know, their sister and brother, they don't particularly care for each other's ideology, and you have the mess you call the Lakers.
Yeah, man, it reminds me a lot of the Dodgers within the courts, where you get these family bickerings that get in the way of the actual team. You know, what's best for the team, and you get all this family drama. It's just a shame, yeah, because, you know, the Lakers obviously have been one of the most dominant teams in the last, you know, 15 years, have a huge fan base. You know, Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, you know, Gasol, Dwight Howard. Yet they have an abysmal record. I haven't even looked lately. I was looking the other day and just looking at the Mavericks and the Lakers, two of the more dominant teams, and they're in the cellar in the rankings. It's just comical almost.
That
is the sense.
That's correct. They're four games out of the playoff spot. And it's not that it's not that they should be rowing the boat to see who's going to get the best record for the lottery pick, but at the same time, you know, I find it comical to find Lamar Odom and Matt Barnes on the Clippers team right now, and they're doing extremely well with the Clippers. And the Lakers felt they weren't good enough, but yet those two guys are pivotal for the Clippers coming off the bench.
Here is what my two cents to your comment is. They're lacking, in my opinion, two things that you need in the basketball to win. You need a bench, and you need chemistry. Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant are oil and water. They don't mix. You're seeing Dwight Howard slowly turn very, very soft, which I don't know why he went. This year he's only averaging 9 rebounds a game. Anderson Varejao in Cleveland, although he's going to miss the rest of the season, averaged more rebounds a game than he did, just to put that into perspective for you. Paul George is averaging almost the same amount of rebounds as Dwight Howard is, and Paul George is a shooting guard, small forward. Obviously, I'm not sure. There's two things that happened that were not very highly publicized. One was after a blowout loss about a month ago, there was a verbal and almost physical altercation between Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard, and it came to the point that Darius Odom Johnson had to hold back Kobe Bryant, and Pau Gasol had to hold back Dwight Howard from then, like, because they were about ready to start punching each other. And there was a team meeting, and Kobe Bryant, and the reason why that fight happened was because Kobe Bryant claimed that he agreed with what Charles Barkley was saying about Dwight Howard, about him being soft and not a good player anymore. There was another team meeting that happened about a week ago where Kobe Bryant asked Dwight Howard directly in the face, "Do you like playing with me?" Because, and like he said all this stuff, like, you're taking the limelight and you're trying to be all whatever. And like Jerry brought up a good point earlier that I didn't even think about. Dwight Howard's only on a 1-year contract, and I think he will be out of there. He'll be out of that.
Yeah, it was kind of like
he'll
a
out of that mess. For darn sure.
Like a rent, you know, kind of like rent it for a year, see how it feels, and if you like him, then you can buy him kind of thing. And, yeah, you know, it's obviously he's not going to be back in L.A. next year.
I mean, you have to keep in mind your best bench player, yes, is Antoine Jameson. What about your best guard player? Chris Duhon, Darius Odom Johnson, Jody Meeks, Devin Eubanks? They have no bench whatsoever, and you're seeing now teams obviously like the Oklahoma City Thunder who can have players like Eric Maynor, like obviously, like the example last year, they had James Harden coming off the bench last year. And all he did was average 18 points off the bench. So now we're starting to see that they can't – you have to have a bench now to compete in the NBA. The Miami Heat learned that lesson hard in their first 2 years of being the Heat, the Heatles. And you just – and it's just – I'm sorry to say they've turned abysmal. But what other else word can you say? They've been a failure. They've been a disappointment. They were like the Miami Marlins of basketball. The Miami Marlins had Jose Reyes. They had Mark Burley. They re-signed Josh Johnson. They had Heath Bell. They looked like they had the chance to contend for the National League East. And all that happened was they had to trade away most of that talent for players like Henderson Alvarez and Yunel Escobar.
Yeah.
And now you're left with the only player you have good on your team is Giancarlo Stanton. So, for the Lakers...
But the other side of this, though, Cleveland Ray, is the fact that the new owner, which is the son to Jerry Buss, decided that he wanted to separate himself from Kobe Bryant. So what did he do? Everybody that was in his corner, he got rid of. He started off by trading Lamar Odom for a bag of peanuts to the Dallas Mavericks, and he got rid of the Flowell, who's doing very well now on another team. He's gotten rid of everybody.
Wait, who was that second guy you mentioned that was on the team?
A Flowell.
Aaron Aflalo?
Yes.
No, Aaron Aflalo was on the Nuggets.
He was on the Lakers at one time.
Oh, you're talking about Derek Fisher, maybe?
No, I'm talking about a Flowell. He was on the Lakers.
Aaron Aflalo was a Denver Nugget. Are you sure? There's somebody else you're thinking of. I know who you're thinking of, but I'm... Anyway, we're not going to debate like little old ladies about tea over this, you know. Anyway.
But what happened in L.A. reminds me a lot of what happened for the Raiders. When Al Davis passed away and you had a regime change, a lot of these guys, you know, they want to get out of their predecessor's shadow, so they want to make their own identity. So what do? They start making waves. They start firing everybody from the old, getting in with the new, you know, just so they can, you know, break out on their own. And I think that's obviously what's happening in L.A. It's what happened in with the Raiders. You know, it's going to take a couple years for everything to probably get back to normal. Sadly for the Lakers, they're not getting any younger, so your guess is as good as mine what the next couple years is going to look like.
And
I agree.
And obviously, Jeremy, you being in L.A. and you being obviously a very big sports guy, I got to ask you, what's it like knowing that Vegas, who's growing rapidly, might I add, one of the top entertainment cities in the United States, won't have a professional sports team, but New Jersey had a basketball team for 40 years? I've always been kind of curious, what's it like knowing that even though you're a busy metropolis, you're growing, you have a big, you have a good chance, you have a, you know, loyal fans, obviously because of the UNLV. What's it like not having a team? Because I think that there should be at least an NHL team in Vegas, at least, just because the market there is so huge.
And you know what? It took me a while to realize what was missing, because I grew up in Dallas, you know, during the dynasty of the Cowboys, and every time they won a Super Bowl, you would see stands set up in all the hotels, malls, everybody selling T-shirt, caps, pennants, things like that. Everybody would be wearing their colors. Yeah, that, you know, sense of camaraderie. It was just, it was such a culture. And then I come out to Vegas, and you don't have that. But then when I go visit cities, like when I go back to Dallas once a year, visit my buddy in Detroit, but then I see that again firsthand, then I realize how much I actually miss that, having almost like, you know, it's almost like a cult, for lack of better words. And it's just terrible that we don't have a team to support on a professional level, despite the fact it's one of the most visited cities. We have a good, you know, you'd have a good local following, not to mention all the people that would come into town to watch the teams play. You know, we'd have a great market for a professional sports team, but gambling, I think, is obviously numero uno here in town, and they have a feeling that would conflict with whatever team they bring in.
The part that cracks me up the most, though, is the fact that I'm listening to the NFL talk about, well, we don't want a team in Las Vegas because of the gambling, but yet we go to Wembley Stadium every year, and because the NFL gets 10% of the proceeds, it's okay to have play-by-play gambling during the games in Wembley Stadium. So it's a mockery of what you're trying to. It's hypocritical to the mass majority. And the same thing came with the Maloose with the Sacramento Kings. You know, Stern would talk about, no, we can't have one in Las Vegas because of this, because of that, because of this. Are you kidding me? It's the only sanctioned area. And again, because you're not getting anything out of Las Vegas from a gambling standpoint, you're going to go ahead and punish the city for something. And the people of the city, when we had the All-Star game here, you can probably remember, Jeremy, the people booed Stern, and he has not actually recovered from that, and he's basically made it clear this is one city, if he has anything to do with, he's not going to have anything, you know, he's going to make sure that they get punished during his tenure. And the Maloose made it clear if he doesn't find a buyer, they were going to move the city after he takes steps down as the commissioner, and he found a buyer in Seattle to take over the doggone team.
Now it looks like the Milwaukee. So another team will hopefully relocate to Vegas.
It's not that they wouldn't have the followers. The problem is the city doesn't get the opportunity more so than anything.
I think it would be interesting because you have to look at all these small market teams. I think the Charlotte Bobcats have been a complete and utter failure. I mean, just in the short 8 years they've been around, they've had one winning season, and that's it. And they've had all these chances. They've had chances for top picks. They blow it. You know, you have Michael Jordan as a GM. He's terrible. I think they just need to completely abandon Charlotte, because even when the Hornets were winning, you know, they still had trouble drawing in Charlotte. And can you imagine?
That's true. That's true. When they had Larry Johnson and from UNLV and a couple of other players there, Alonzo Mourning, they had a hell of a team, and you're right, they were not winning. I mean, they were not. They were not. The crowd was not coming in to support them.
Well, it's like the Jaguars in the NFL too.
Exactly. You know, and by the way, we were making a joke about Cleveland and all that stuff earlier. Cleveland's pretty dang loyal. So, I mean, at least
we
are winning games. And here's the thing, too. New Orleans, really? Orlando? Orlando has 200,000 people. I mean, yeah, I understand you have that draw because you can go see an Orlando Magic game and then maybe go to Disney World, but, I mean, that's all you can do in Orlando is Disney World. In Vegas, you can go see a magic show. If you're over a certain age, you can gamble and go see women.
Right.
I've never been to Vegas. Isn't there like a boatload of amusement? I mean, it's not just an adult town anymore. Isn't there a lot of stuff you can just do, like amusement parks? There's NASCAR.
Well, I mean, we don't have. They're building like I think another Wet n Wild. We used to have one, and then it closed. I mean, they're trying to get more non-gaming things for people to do, and it's slowly coming around. I mean, Vegas had abandoned the whole family atmosphere that they tried so hard to do in the 90s, and it failed. So, you know, but, yeah, the answer to your question, yeah, there's starting to become a lot more to do outside of just the Las Vegas Boulevard to do in this town.
Yeah, I think it's a dang shame that we can look and we can have professional sports teams in Buffalo, Calgary, Thunder, I mean, Winnipeg, but Vegas doesn't have a team. A place like Indianapolis only has two. Orlando somehow has a team. I just don't get. Someone please explain to me. Atlanta, even with players like Josh Smith and Al Horford, still will draw like only like 5,000 people a game. Can somebody please explain? Somebody please smack those Atlanta fans right across the head.
It's terrible. I know. We actually have a winning, a team that can win games, but you can't get people to watch it. It's tough. I mean, it's just these teams.
Yeah.
I think what it is, it's like the Braves. Good example. I mean, they won in 1995, and every year since then, they're still competitive. They're always a good team, but you just don't see that huge following like you do with some of these teams like the Cubs, who haven't won in God knows how long, but yet people still support them. I think it's what it is, quite honestly, is, places like, Detroit, Chicago, New York, they have older roots that had teams around, like, the baseball sense, barely teens and 20s. They had generations and generations of people who watched it that got passed down. Like, the Braves only came to Atlanta in somewhere in the mid-60s, so you have, 50 years of history. It just takes time for it to become immersed into your culture, I think. That's my theory on that.
Comment. I just realized, this card, this 19-0-whatever card from the Fred Clark,
mm-hmm.
actually has never seen the Cubs win a World Series title. And
what was the year of that card?
1909.
Wow.
Isn't that just like the weirdest thing to think that this card from 1909 has never seen the Cubs win a World Series, and it's been around for almost 104 years.
Yeah. And
wow.
Waving the gun in Chicago, it doesn't look like it's going to be anytime soon, sadly.
Maybe this
I always love the underdog stories, but it just ain't looking too promising.
I agree.
Well, Jeremy, I have to say it's really awesome that we're having you on the show. I would love to have you back on again. I know Jerry probably thinks the exact same thing I'm thinking right now, and
absolutely.
That you're a
yeah.
great guy. We love. I would you be interested in coming back on again?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think Jerry, we should bring him back on sometime.
I absolutely agree.
Well, the thing
is, guys, we'll get in touch with that and figure out something that works out. But yeah, I'd absolutely love to be back on.
No.
Okay, and Jeremy, also you have the option to pretty much end it now, or you can stay on with us on our next topic, which is going to be basically Tim Tebow being forced to the Jets based on the owner Woody Johnson. He's saying mm-hmm. that he said that Tim Tebow was forced on him, and that he didn't get an opportunity to really make the final decision. And
yeah.
That's a really good one. I mean, I thought the final decision was based on the person that held the pocketbook. But
yeah, that's an interesting thing. I mean, there's a lot of finger-pointing, blame games. You know, the ex-GM Tannenbaum picked him up, forced him on the owner, and, you know, you can believe what you want. My 5 cent, my nickel worth of opinion on it is ultimately the owner would have some say in it. I mean, he has confidence in his subordinates, and, you know, if you really didn't want him, you could have said, look, it ain't happening, but, you know, somebody's got to take the blame, and it's easy to blame the guy that's no longer with the club, saying, yeah, it was his fault. So, yeah. But sadly, guys, yeah, I got to get back to work here, so I wouldn't be able to chat about Tebow this time around.
Well, thank you very much.
Totally.
Maybe you can have a porn star on some time.
Jeremy, before you go, how is the Earl Weaver cards and the Stan Musial cards going right now?
Anytime a player passes, you always see a little bit of a spike in the value and interest, and then it usually lasts maybe a month or two, and then it goes back down to where it was before, maybe up 10%, and that's where it's going to stay. You know, it's a morbid fact of the hobby. I mean, when somebody passes, their stuff goes up, and that's, you know, usually more than Weaver, just because he had a much more following. Cardinals had much more following overall than Baltimore, so... Yeah, we did see a spike in both of their sales, and it's still more relevant, you know, it's still inflated right now even.
That's good to know.
Well,
I wanted to say that before you walked off the show there, because of the recent passing of both of them on the same day.
What's that now?
I said I wanted to bring that up before you got off the show today because of the fact that they both passed on the same day.
Yeah,
in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I heard about the Orioles with Earl Weavers on, like, some Orioles fantasy cruise, and I thought that was terrible. And then all of a sudden I saw the little sports ticker, and all of a sudden Musial. I'm like, wow. So we were looking, you know, well, who's the next oldest Hall of Famer? And I think actually it's Bobby Doerr. I think he's the oldest living Hall of Famer right now. And looking through the list, yeah, you know, Shane Deese is up there, Monty Irvin's up there, Ralph Kiner. I mean, you have several guys in the mid-90s at this point. It's, you know, sad to see it happen, man. You know, these guys played during the 50s. You know, when baseball is at its height. It just sucks. It is what it is. But I hate to see him go.
You're seeing a dying breed. Jeremy Brown, thank you so much. It was an honor having you on. Hopefully next time, dare I even say, maybe one of the Pawn Stars could come on here and say hello to us.
If it can happen, I will, guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you very
much,
man.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you. Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Should we go to a station break and try and get our notes together, or what should we do, just for a minute station break?
That's exactly where I was headed, to a station break.
Alrighty. Well,
hello again. Freedomist Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com. Hey, guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, S-O-L-A-V-E-I.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus,
And another kicker, if you sign up 3 people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, solovay.com/freedomizer.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at freedomizerradio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, welcome back. This is Jerry at Cleveland Ray, and we
are
Sports Addicts, and we will see you next week, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time, and hopefully you'll tune in again to listen to Sports Addicts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.